Coming up on Boston Public Radio, after laboring for weeks in complete secrecy, the Republicans are going to reveal their health care plan. We talked to Chuck Todd from Meet the Press about the bill and if the Senate has the votes to pass it. From there, we open the lines and ask you, off the Democrats' colossal losses this week, is it time for Nancy Pelosi to step aside and make way for new leadership? And this year marks the 10th anniversary of the iPhone, the pocket-sized gadget that fundamentally changed the way we live. We talked to tech columnist Andy Iannacco about that and more.
I'm Jared Bowen, and for Jim Brody, we kick off Hour 2 with Police Commissioner Bill Evans, who's joining us for the hour, taking our questions and yours on everything from what the Boston Police Department is doing to keep crime rates down to the challenges of securing high-profile events like the Tall Ships and the 4th of July fireworks. That and more next on Boston Public Radio.
From a transmitter atop Great Blue Hill, this is WGBH, live, local talk, Boston Public Radio.
Welcome to Boston Public Radio. I am Marjorie Egan. Jim Brody is on vacation, and WGBH arts editor Jared Bowen is ably here, once again, filling in. Good morning.
Great to be with you, Marjorie.
So the big reveal is imminent. Senate Republicans plan to release a health care bill that they had been working on in complete secrecy. No hearings, no committee votes on the bill. Yesterday, Chuck Todd asked Republican Senator John Barrasso of Wyoming if he could really defend this closed-door process.
The Democrats have said from the beginning they weren't interested in working with us on the changes. I heard Senator McCaskill, who I respect, but President Obama said to the Democrats all the way through, forcefully defend and be proud of Obamacare. They were wearing blinders. They were offering blank checks. The American people deserve better.
So if the American people do indeed deserve better, is better what we're going to see in this health care bill? Chuck Todd joins us on the line. He's the moderator of Meet the Press, which you can catch Sunday mornings at 10:30 on NBC Boston. That's Channel 10 on most providers. He's also the host of Meet the Press Daily on MSNBC, which I watch every day at 5 o'clock, and the political director of NBC News. Hello, Chuck Todd.
Well, good morning. Good to talk to you guys.
Good to talk to you as well. So do we have any clues about what we're going to see today? And if it is not better, and from what I've seen, I'm not sure it is going to be that much better than the House bill, what happens?
There's really no significant difference between the House and the Senate bill. There's a couple things on the margin. Subsidies, the tax credits, for lower income would be done by income rather than age. That was one difference between the House and the Senate. And from what we see, the other one is a slower phase out of Medicaid expansion for the state, but also less funds because of the current expansion, because they would change the way they calculated things. So this would be a slower growth rate. But for the most part, it looks more similar than it looks different. And there had, you know, for what it's worth, I think there was an impression that the Senate Republicans were going to come up with something a lot different, and it's not. And so now the question is, which political constituency do Republicans fear the most? Their base, that will punish them for failing to fulfill a promise, or independents who haven't liked this bill and certainly won't like this one? And you know, I think it's clear what Mitch McConnell's decision is, and I think reinforced by the result in Georgia, which is better to satisfy the base.
Chuck, if McConnell loses anything more than two votes, this doesn't go forward. That's such a narrow margin, and lots of senators already, even more than we were hearing last week, from more than just the typical, like Susan Collins and from Murkowski from Alaska, have expressed reservation. Do you think there's any chance that this will move forward?
Look, I think there is a better chance it passes than it doesn't. I'm not saying it's a sure deal. I mean, look, Lisa Murkowski, I think, is already a no. I'm pretty convinced Alaska is in a unique situation. They really get penalized the less government essentially intervention there is. Just because if you let the market work its will in Alaska, think about just specialists. You know, they just have a limited amount of doctors up there and physicians. So the cost is through the roof if you didn't have any sort of government sharing, if you will, of resources and spreading risk. So Alaska's in a uniquely bad situation here, and I think she's definitely a no. After that, it's a weird combination of votes to watch. So you have four senators on the right, Pat Toomey of Pennsylvania, Ted Cruz, Rand Paul, Mike Lee, who believe this bill doesn't do enough to repeal Obamacare. Then you've got you mentioned Susan Connolly from Murkowski, but then I would call the sort of the pragmatists of the center of the Senate, Rob Portman of Ohio, your John McCain, Jeff Flake of Arizona, who also happens to be up for reelection in a swing state, who are uncomfortable both with the process and with how this uniquely impacts. Shelley Moore Capito of West Virginia is another one. West Virginia is a state that has benefited greatly from the Medicaid expansion. So, look, it's possible if these senators vote their state interest, if they put their state interest ahead of their political, of their national party's political interest, then this bill has no chance. But I think when you look at it, and those, the reason this bill has a chance is because I think that the argument, and they may not be wrong politically, the argument is a very persuasive one on the right that says failure to do this, would you'll be punished badly by the base.
Okay. So the fact that the president said this is a mean bill and that he needed more help from Democrats to make it a better bill, that's and the fear that the president may turn on the people who voted for this by calling the whole thing a mean bill, where does that factor in?
I got to think that does make it a little Mitch McConnell's job a little bit harder. Mm-hmm. And don't forget, it is possible that another reason why I'm confident that McConnell might get this vote through is he can always make the case to a wavering senator, guess what? We still have to reconcile the House and the Senate. You'll still have one more chance to stop this if you really don't like it. So now whether that's true or not, you know, there were some Senate I remember President Obama making that case to some wavering Senate Democrats during the first phase of Obamacare, saying, hey, don't worry, we can fix that in reconciliation. Well, guess what? That actually never happened, right? They never did because of the Scott Brown election. You know, they ended up passing the exact same bill to them because they were afraid of bringing it back for another vote. So I'm not convinced that it's a guarantee you'll see another vote. But I think because that is a potential, right, that the Senate and the House bill are different enough that they'd actually have one more shot at voting again, that might be a way to get a wavering senator to vote yes for now.
Chuck Todd, we saw the two losses for Democrats in the election on Tuesday, at least one in Georgia. There was a lot of hope that the Democrats would take that. So, of course, there's a lot of hand-wringing now. What does this mean for the Democratic mm-hmm. Party? What's the strategy? What does this mean for the midterms? Is it too much to look at these two losses to think that, as some even within the party are saying, that the party is in trouble? It needs to rethink its strategy going forward?
I think they're – look, I'm going to be in the minority here. I think they should use Georgia and look at it very carefully and see how – and see it as a blueprint for the national campaign in 2018. And here's why I say that. Yes, there was an outsized amount of money, but that's the point. You had the Democrats and the Republicans nationalized this race, which meant – you have a test case, a petri dish of what messages were working in that national environment and what messages didn't. This is suburban Atlanta, major market. So it's like, you know, it's like, put it this way. It's like when General Mills rolls out a new cereal and they may just like suddenly it's available only in Kansas City stores and they see how sales went. If it goes well, they spread it around the country. So I do think there's a lot to glean from it. And I'm sorry if I'm the Democrats here. I look at the most effective ad campaign against Ossoff and the Democrats was what? Okay, if you elect him, he may be seen new and different, but you're going to get the same old of what you rejected before in Nancy Pelosi, Speaker of the House, et cetera. I do think Democrats have to figure out if they want to run on a change message, can their leadership look like the past rather than the future?
And
it's a tough question to ask, and I know that Nancy Pelosi folks take this personally. But they got to remember, politics ain't personal.
Yeah, so Nancy Pelosi looks like Cruella de Vil to half the country. I suppose she's supposed to not take that personally. But one last thing.
I hear you. And by the way, I understand why she does take it personally. She's been demonized unfairly
yep.
for a decade. okay? But guess what?
It works.
Sometimes that happens. She's not the only person. Ask Jimmy Carter what that's like. Ask George H.W. Bush. That's George W. Bush. That's Barack Obama. It's the price of success in political leadership.
So any chance of her stepping aside? It seems unlikely to me.
I would, no. I would be shocked. I mean, she's, look, here's the thing about her, and I think why she is always able to sort of tamp down these insurgencies inside the Democratic Party. She is personally an extraordinarily loyal person and just one of these people that her word is her bond with, and so that matters to them. The second thing, she's an extraordinarily good fundraiser.
Yeah.
I mean, here is a leader of the Democratic Party who's been in the minority for the last 6 years, and she regularly raised more money for her party than John Boehner could as the sitting Speaker of the House. I mean, that's how good of a fundraiser she is. But the fact of the matter is, you know, you could say it's an old, tired, worn playbook by the Republicans to tie generic Democratic candidate X to Nancy Pelosi, but it, guess what? Sometimes old plays work. And it's a play that keeps working. And I'm, you know, it especially look at John Ossoff. He was I'm not going to call him charismatically challenged, but he wasn't, you didn't look at him and say, oh, here's the next future president of the United States. He was just sort of your average rank and file potential member of Congress. Ditto with the Republicans. And when you have that kind of candidate who doesn't have the charisma to overcome being nationalized, to overcome being defined by somebody else, then that outsized message has an outsized impact. And I think it did on Ossoff. He was relatively unknown. And they said, well, he's a Democrat. He's in the House. He'll have to vote for Nancy Pelosi as Speaker. And if you're a swing voter and you don't like Trump, right?
Yep.
That doesn't mean you like Nancy Pelosi. And that's the challenge here for the Democrats.
Okay, Chuck Todd, next time when we have more time, we're going to get into you and Game of Thrones and what it has to say about modern politics. But that's for our next time.
What do you mean? It's raw. I wish politics were as honest as Game of Thrones, right?
Hey, thank you very much, Chuck Todd. Always a pleasure.
And let me be the next person to say, give some money to public radio.
Oh.
I know I'm not supposed to say. So, yes, I know it's Pledge Month, so there.
It is Pledge Month. Thank you very much. We'll
part.
Be expecting your check very soon, Chuck Todd. Thank you.
Count me in.
Okay, thanks.
We're putting your tote bag in the mail right now. Chuck Todd joins us every week. He's the moderator of Meet the Press, which you can catch Sunday mornings at 10:30 on NBC Boston. Of course, that's Channel 10 on most cable boxes. He's also the host of Meet the Press Daily on MSNBC and the political director for NBC News. Coming up, we're asking you, is it time for Nancy Pelosi to step down? That conversation next on 89.7 WGBH Boston Public Radio.
This is Boston Public Radio on WGBH, made possible thanks to listener contributions. Your support of just $10 or $20 a month keeps all these great conversations coming your way. Please take a moment to give now at WGBHnews.org or call 888-897-9424. And thanks.
Okay, so listen to this. This is one of the great gifts we have going on here. This exclusive WGBH Curiosity Cruise starring the Curiosity Desk own Edgar B. Hurwicke III. He'll host this multimedia history lesson. This is a cruise that takes off from Long Wharf the Saturday of September 9th. And that's usually good because the weather's usually good in September. Cocktails, tasty bites. You get a tour of all the historic and fabled harbor islands, ghost stories, tales of mutiny, all this great curiosity stuff. A pair of tickets can be yours with a gift of $220 to WGBH now. Or, can you do the sustainer thing on this? I'm not sure. No, I don't think, no sustainer thing on this. Anyway, secure your tickets now. 888, and Edgar, by the way, is a fun guy, just let me tell you. 888-897-9424 or WGBHnews.org.
You can become a sustaining member. That's the monthly giving plan. You can just make easy monthly gifts to keep the programs you love, including Boston Public Radio with its current interloper, Jared Bowen. Normally, you're supporting Jim and Marjorie here on the air. Keep them on the air month after month, year after year. It's an easy way to give. Just pick any amount to charge each month on your credit card. Just $5 or $10 per month is all it takes. But you, of course, can give more. Again, call 888-897-9424. 4 or go to gbhnews.org.
Now, here's the main reason why listener support matters, because I really like my job. Jim Browdy likes his job. Jared Bowen likes his job. We would like to be employed on a continuing basis here at WGBH, but really you're supporting not just Boston Public Radio, not just Open Source, which is every Friday night at 8:30, Open Studio.
Open Studio, yeah.
Wrong show.
wrong network.
Wrong network, wrong station. Forget that. It's Open Studio every Friday night at 8:30. You're supporting everything that goes on here at WGBH. That's why it matters so much. And we have some people to thank already. And we really do sincerely thank you. Marion Douglas, Susan in Norwood, Carolyn in Wilmington, Connecticut. Wherever you are, Carolyn, thank you. Linda in Sherbourne and Paul in Roxbury, thank you very, very much.
We also want to thank William from Boston, Lauren from Andover, Janet from Gloucester. What a beautiful day to be up in Gloucester.
Spectacular.
Maybe we can run up and join Janet after the show.
Wouldn't that be fun?
It would be fun. And Teresa from West Barnstable, thanks to all of you for your support.
Okay. $220 now. Get a pair of tickets to the WGBH Curiosity Cruise starring Edgar B. Herwig III. 888-897-9424. WGBHnews.org. Okay, welcome back to Boston Public Radio. Jared Bowen, you just heard him. He's here for Jim Browdy, who knows where he is. If you're just tuning in, we were talking with MSNBC's Chuck Todd about Nancy Pelosi's leadership. After the Democrats' huge belly flop this week, losing two congressional elections in the era of Trump, Democrats are wondering if Nancy Pelosi is becoming a major liability. Here's how Representative Tim Ryan summed up the situation with CNN's Don Lemon.
You think Nancy Pelosi is more toxic than Donald Trump?
You know what? The honest answer is, in some areas of the country, yes, she is. That's the honest answer.
Why so?
I just think, first, as unfair as it is, there have been a lot of people that have spent a lot of money running negative ads against her. And I think that in certain areas, like in some of these special election districts, it doesn't benefit our candidates.
So we're asking you at 877-301-8970, should Nancy Pelosi go? Is this sexism? Is this ageism? Or is Pelosi truly a liability for the party, unable to lead in the era of Trump? Is this about San Francisco, where she's from, which is a sort of associated with all the lefty loonies that a lot of the country cannot stand? Is that part of a problem? 877-301-8970. No, I was looking at the Zogby poll from a couple of days ago, and Zogby has been somewhat erratic in his polling. Yeah. So we shouldn't put too much weight in this. But when you look at the compilation of polls on Real Clear Politics, which I am sort of obsessed with, you see Trump's approval rating, and it fluctuates a little bit, you know, high 30s, low 40s. Then you see Congress's approval rating. It's terrible. It is really terrible. So Trump, with his 39-40%, is higher generally in the Zogby poll and, frankly, in a lot of other polls than almost everybody in Washington, D.C. He's higher than Chuck Schumer, who's the head of the Senate that's a Democrat. He's higher than Pelosi. Schumer and Pelosi are very close, and Paul Ryan is very close. People don't like him either. They don't like Mitch McConnell. So she's not the only one. But there were many people that talked about Pelosi's impact on that race because the ads tied John Ossoff directly to Nancy Pelosi.
Well, I'd like to hope that this isn't ageism or sexism here. You have to remember, of course, this is a woman who has been in Congress for an extraordinary amount of time. She's been her party's leader for about 15 years. And if you look at what happens in the corporate world, the business world, once you lose confidence, there's got to be a shift. There's got to be a shift in leadership. It's not often that you see leaders remain that long. Of course, we're not talking about the corporate or business world. We are talking about Congress. This is completely different, talking about politics. But once you start to lose that faith, there's got to be some sort of shift. And that's not to say that she's completely lost faith, because there's a lot of the Democratic Party faithful who love this woman. She keeps
Michael Capuano is a big fan of hers, the congressman from Cambridge and Somerville. I mean, yeah, he is still Cambridge and Somerville, but Seth Moulton was part of the revolt.
Exactly. But in her native California, of course, she continues to overwhelmingly be elected back to Congress. But you have to wonder if there's no way you can counter the fact that Republicans are going to use her in ads the way they just did in Tuesday's elections. that's going to stay with her at this point.
You know, I think there definitely is a certain element of sexism in here because she's spring chicken compared to some of these people that are in Congress. She is 77 years old. John Conyers, 88 years old.
I had no idea.
He's a rep from Michigan's 13th district. Diane Feinstein, who's also from California, 84 years old. Orrin Hatch, 83 years old. John McCain, 80 years old. There's also the difference between Republicans and Democrats because the way the Democrats pick their leadership, the Democrat leaders, because of seniority, are much, much older than the Republican leaders. I mean, Paul Ryan is not that old. So I don't know if it's just sexism or a combination of sexism and ageism or the fact that she just is not good on television. She should stay off television.
Let's go to Stephen in the car. See what you have to say. Hi, Stephen.
Hi, Jared. What I am thinking is that I think it's good to support people who are we know and who have been effective in the past. I think one of the issues is when we try to get new people, when we pin all our hopes on congressmen outside of Atlanta, and then we have to look at and see what we're doing. I think Mr. Ossoff was calm, but he had all of the traction, I think, of Ichabod Crane. And when you've got Ichabod Crane and you're putting all of your hopes and you're talking about a response to Trump, and when you're pouring $50 million into it, there's something that's wrong. I'd rather have seen Mr. Ossoff be what he was, a gentleman in a way, consistent. I'd rather have seen him live in the district, and I'd rather have seen him raise some money of his own. I'd rather have seen him with some personality of his own. And I really think we have to decide what it is we're doing. Bernie Sanders was
75 years old, by the way.
Yes, but the 75 reminded me of when I was a kid and listening to voices in the 60s. In the 60s, people had great integrity, and they said what they meant, and they meant what they said. And, you know, it didn't go over very well.
Yeah.
I don't really want people to change their point of view. Paul Ryan was against Trump, wanted nothing to do with him. And I really want to use some of the playbook of the Republicans. I want people who have some personality. I want people who can stand up and generate some interest by a smile, by an idea.
Yeah, we got it, Stephen. We got it, Stephen. Thank you very, very much for the call. You know, I should point out that one of the things, the health care bill has come out. We don't have all the details, but we do know it essentially looks very much like the House bill. The idea that the moderate Republicans are going to rewrite this in a dramatic way is not true. This is another drastic plan. If you like health care and you are depending on the government to help you out, especially with Medicaid. So Nancy Pelosi is very good in the behind-the-scenes kind of machinations.
Yes. Yep.
And she's a very good fundraiser, and she's a very disciplined leader. So she is bad on TV, and she's very disliked, but she's also very effective.
I just keep going back to, you know, I think this is what you're talking about, too, the image problem. Once you have that, it's a really difficult thing to rehab. And, it's a little bit entrenched at this point. All right, well, coming up, the iPhone turns 10 this year. How has it changed us and technology? Tech columnist Andy Inatko joins us to talk about that and more. The conversation continues on 89.7 WGBH. This is Boston Public Radio.
It's time to support Boston Public Radio on WGBH. Listener contributions pay for the program and keep it on the air. You don't have to give much to make a difference. Please make a difference by giving now at WGBHnews.org or call 888-897-9424.
Well, one of the ways you can join us right now is to join the Curiosity Cruise, led by WGBH's Edgar B. Herwick III. He's the chief of our Curiosity Desk here, and he will host a multimedia history lesson, Party on the Water. Now, this cruise, which you can buy tickets for right now, and I think we're running out of tickets, but you still have a slight chance to get them. The cruise departs from Long Wharf on Saturday, September 9th. You'll enjoy drinks and tasty bites as you explore the historic and fabled harbor islands. There will be ghost stories, tales of mutiny, Well, you learned all about the oldest lighthouse built in America right off the coast of Boston. I know. I didn't realize that.
Neither did I.
As I was putting my little jigsaw puzzle together last year of all the lighthouses.
Really?
Yes.
I did not know you did jigsaws.
It's very soothing and calming. Just like the Curiosity Cruise,
Jared.
It's soothing, calming. A pair of tickets can be yours with a gift of $220 to WGBH right now. Tickets are limited, as I mentioned. Just call 888-897-9424 or go to WGBHnews.org. Now I'm going back to my puzzle.
When I do jigsaw puzzles, they're of dollar bills. That's what I do jigsaw puzzles of. Because I want to be reminded that only $5 per month is all it takes to become a new member here. And the reason we're here, the reason the whole station is here, is because enough people thought it was worthwhile to give $5 a month. I mean, that is a small amount of money. Think of the time. I hope that you are listening to this station. We are on 24/7, 7 days a week. We have great stuff all weekend long, including a new BPR edition on Sundays with Andrew Cabral. So you don't have to give a lot of money, but if you give a little bit goes a long way, and it really means a lot to us to know that you care to kind of chip in and keep the support going here at WGBH. We got radio, we got TV, we got all this stuff going on. Welcome back to Boston Public Radio. We are talking with our tech guy, Andy Anato, because coming up, that's not the only reason we're talking to him, but this is a big one, the iPhone turns 10 years old this year. We're going to talk about how it has changed us in technology. Our tech columnist, Andy Anato, will talk about that and much more here on WGBH 89.7 Boston Public Radio. Hello, Andy Anato.
Hey, Marjorie.
Well, before we get to the iPhone turning 10 years old, which is a shocking thing to think about itself, and to think about how everybody's life has so dramatically been changed. Tell us about these electric bicycles that apparently you've been riding around, and they're very healthy and they're fun. And what's the deal?
It's such a cheat. It's wonderful. I've been riding this. It's not a fully electric bicycle. It's what's called a pedelec or pedal electric assist bike. So it's sort of like you're riding a tandem bicycle with a much more healthy person behind you, and the thing will not move unless you're pedaling. But there's a little controller that just lets you set at one time. Do I want the motor to do 40% of the work, 30% of the work? And there's even what I call a rage mode, which is, no, just look, do 95% of it. I just want to get home. It's been a long day. But it means that so you get a great workout, but on a day like this, maybe you don't want to sweat that much, so you can lay off a little bit. Or instead of spending 30 minutes going 5-6 miles, maybe you'll spend 30 minutes going 10 or 15 miles. And now you're starting to think, gee, I was going to buy another car for the family, but maybe this little electric is going to do the job of our second or third car.
Well, that's what seems so fascinating, that this really is – for a long time, electric bikes didn't really catch on. But it seems all of a sudden people are realizing that this is a great alternative to the car, because the commutes can be pretty comparable to what you can do on a bike and a car.
Right. And also, their laws prohibit you from riding a fully electric scooter or something like that. Unless you have a license for a motorcycle or something like that. But modern lithium polymer battery technology means you can have a really powerful motor and not a very big package. And modern computers and electronics mean that you can have it do very smart things. Like, again, it really just feels like I'm very, very much healthier than I actually am, because I don't have a throttle. I don't have to set anything. If I pedal faster, harder, I will be going faster. If I pedal slower, I lay off, I will be going slower. And that's all you have to do.
How much does it cost?
A cheap, good one will cost you about $1,000, $1,500. The one that I'm testing costs
not that bad. The ones you're testing cost what?
Cost $3,000 or $4,000, but that's where you're getting a fully designed bike that's designed around this technology. It has really premium components, but even that's considered like kind of an expensive one. And I'm a freelance rider. I spend $4,000 to $6,000 on used cars. This new bike for $4,000 is so much better than any used car I've ever bought.
Well, wait a minute. So for $1,000, what do you get?
For $1,000, you'll get sort of like a basic bike that has a good motor, has a good battery inside it. The controller won't be quite as nice as the one that I've got here. You might have to control it with a phone. There are also companies that will sell you, like, for $400 or $500 on eBay, something that will let you adapt an old bike, but it's really designed very badly, and the batteries are cheap. And
okay.
But other companies are stepping into the fray. There's actually a Cambridge company that is called a Super Pedestrian. They have a product called the Copenhagen Wheel, which is all the really cool, high-quality, high-priced batteries and motors, but it's a rear wheel you can have your bike shop put onto your existing bike, and it's just brilliant.
All right, so let's talk about Apple now. Before we were still going to tease the 10th anniversary conversation, but before that, there was the big conference that happens, the big release you get to find out about for all the Apple enthusiasts. You get to find out about everything that's coming. What's the highlight that that Apple has just introduced?
I would say it's going to sound weird, but they have this new thing called AR Kit, Augmented Reality Kit. And this is not something for consumers. This is something for developers to take advantage of. So have you been playing Pokemon Go? That game where you hold up your phone, you walk around the public garden, and you see Pokemon you can catch.
I know what it is,
So the people who made that game had to work really, really hard to get that technology working. So they had to make a game that made a lot of money. Apple's idea is, what if we just let developers, we'll give them all the tools they need so that anytime they want an app where the user is pointing a phone at something, the AR kit, this code will tell the developer's app, by the way, there is a table here. There's also a flat surface on the ground here. If the developer says, great, I want you to put this model of this building that this person is considering right on top of that table, all they have to do is just, here's the model, here's where it should go, and it will scale it properly, it will light it properly, it will cast shadows. If the user walks around, they will rock around. If you want to have, I want smoke and shadows inside the room, so it looks like a dark castle. And they'll add smoke and shadow and dark castles. It's pretty cool. A lot of the developers have been playing with this by taking really creepy, like, murderous clown characters from video games. And, like, they're in their own, like, living room. And here's, like, that really menacing clown murderer. And I'm like, you don't want to do this. Fuzzy Pokemon. They're adorable.
That'll terrify my little nieces. I can only imagine how bad that can go.
Yeah. You know, we're truncated because of Pledge. Is there anything else we should know about from this get-together?
Let's see.
Well, the big thing is the answer to the Echo, right?
It's a HomePod. It's interesting in the way that Apple would do this. It's not like an Echo. It's not like a smart speaker. They know that their own smart assistant is not as smart as the competitors, but they're saying that we know how to make a really great speaker. We really understand audio, so we're going to make a speaker unlike anything that has ever been done before. It'll actually do things. It will disassemble the audio that you're sending to it, and it realizes that, because of my internal sensors, I know that I'm sort of in the corner of a medium-sized room, and this particular piece of music will sound terrible unless I isolate this vocal, not just vocals, but this one vocal, boost the bass here. I want to put this piece of audio here, this other piece of audio there. It could be it's $350, which is not a heck of a lot of money, but it really is for people who don't want to spend $1,000 on a, quote, real stereo system, but they want something better than a $200 or $300 Bluetooth speaker. It could be pretty cool.
Wow, that is really neat. So Apple is still doing great stuff despite the fact that Steve Jobs is no longer with us.
Yeah, absolutely. That was part of the DNA of the company. Tim Cook is the new CEO, and he was right-hand involved with everything that Apple was doing while Steve was around. And even he is saying that we don't want to continue to do what Steve would have done, because Steve would not have done in 2017 what Steve would be doing in 2005.
Yeah.
It doesn't feel as – is it just me, or it does not feel as sleek and as inventive as it once did?
I will say, personal opinion, of course, that I can really see when they care about something and when they are not terribly excited about it. Max, boy, do they not care about Max, as far as I can see. But you give them a pair of headphones, and oh my God, they're like, I will leave my family to stay at the office and perfect this thing.
All right, he's not going anywhere. We're talking with tech columnist Andy Inatko. The conversation continues on 89.7 WGBH, Boston Public Radio.
Hi, it's Jim Browdy. They say that 90% of life is just showing up, or maybe it's 80%. Whatever it is, it's a big percent. Look, the point is, even though I didn't show up for work today, it's a great time for you to show up and shore up support for Boston Public Radio. Make that call or make that online gift, but whatever you do, do it now before the weekend shows up. Here's Marjorie and Jared to tell you more.
That, of course, was Jim Browdy, and previously we featured the Smug Mug, and that was a picture of Jim looking smugly with his nose up in the air, and everybody got a big kick out of that. Now we have a new one, and this is really cute and clever. It's called the Public Radio Nerd Mug. You can get this for a gift of $120 or, as a sustainer, $10 a month on the sustainer plan. It's pretty neat. Features the 89.7 WGBH logo on one side and the words Public Radio Nerd on the other. You can impress your family and your friends with your nerddom. And, of course, you can put your favorite beverage in there and show what an intellectual WGBH supporter you are. So, again, $10 a month on the Sustainer plan or $120 all at once. The number 888-897-9424 or give securely online at WGBHnews.org.
And, of course, we are here, WGBH, Boston Public Radio. We're here because someone else has already thought it was important to make it available to our community. Again, it just takes $5 per month. That's all that we're asking to become a new member. The number 888-897-9424.
And the reason the sustaining membership is such a great thing, you don't have to spend that much money. You don't have to shell out a lot of money at once. You can just give a little bit every month, but it really helps people hear budget because it's not just WBUR. I mean, it's not just, oh my God, I'm doing it again. Naming the opposition. It's not just WGBH. It's all at Boston Public Radio. It is all that goes on here from the morning all night long and all weekend long. You're supporting all of us at once. 888-897-9424, WGBHnews.org.
So right here at WGBH.
That's right. Thank you, Jared.
By 7 o'clock tonight, you'll be entered to win a brand new, we were just talking about the competition, but now we're talking about Amazon Echo Show, plus a $500 Amazon gift card. The Amazon Echo Show features everything you love about Alexa, like streaming WGBH, listening to NPR News, or getting the weather. You can watch videos, YouTube, ask for lyrics, anything you want that can answer. A gift of any amount gets you entered, but only until 7 o'clock tonight. Just call 888-897-9424 or WGBHnews.org.
Now, the pressure's on. Please don't stop giving because Marjorie said the wrong call letters. We really need you. We're WGBH.
So that's you and not me.
That's right. So, well, you know.
I get to come back.
As I always say, I'm the only person with a radio show who has difficulty talking. So there you go. It is WGBH, and we really need your help, and we really appreciate all your help. So think of us. Help us out a little bit, a lot, whatever you can. 888-97-9424, WGBHnews.org. Okay, welcome back. We're talking with Andy Anako, our tech genius, and we're talking about the iPhone that turns 10 this year and how it has changed everything. You know, Andy Anako, I was just reading down this list and I couldn't really believe it. We didn't have apps 10 years ago. We didn't have selfies. We didn't have threaded text messages. Remember when you first started texting, they were all individuals.
We didn't even have internet on phones, remember? The idea, and this was because of the carriers, the network saying that, look, if we let people you have to have the internet on their phones, our networks will not be able to keep up with them. It was the iPhone that said, no, we want to have an internet device that has a real web browser, not just, okay, we'll let you have an index card version of the New York Times. That in itself was the big breakthrough.
I can remember, I mean, we still had just only 10 years ago, we still had what they were called PDAs, right?
Yep.
Those things you carry.
Personal digital assistants.
Exactly. I remember doing a whole stand-up saying, you're no longer going to need this. And I took out the computer. You're no longer going to need that. Took out the iPod. You're no longer going to need the PDA. And yeah, it's so hard to believe. I mean, is this how much do you think this has changed our world?
Really, that was the first salvo in a total revolution, because now we sort of imagine all the things we rely on every single day, all the infrastructure, just from being able to do electronic payments from a phone, the ability to be able to figure out, getting back to the electric bike, I've been deleting the use of my car so much because I realized that, the reason why I didn't use buses before is because I didn't know when they're coming, I don't know when they're picking up, I don't know if they're late, and now there's an app that not only tells me exactly, here's the nearest bus, you take the number 64, picks up from this point in Central Square, but it also says there's a transponder that says it's going to be exactly 3 minutes late. It's brilliant.
If we were just going through the research preparing for the segment, I didn't remember this, that people thought the iPhone was actually going to flop. Is that true?
There was a lot of things that were really different about it. Starting with, it didn't have a keyboard or what people recognize as a keyboard. Remember that BlackBerry was not just successful. It had done its own revolution by putting communications in your pocket. And even inside Apple, one of the fiercest, angriest internal debates was, should it have a physical clicky keyboard? And Phil Schiller, who is still one of the four horsemen of Apple Executive Board, was like, no. I will not let this ship unless it has a physical keyboard. It really took a break of imagination to say that it's okay to have a virtual glass keyboard. People will deal with it.
And you know what else is so life-changing? If you are waiting for the bus forever and you find out through your phone that it's going to be a long time, you can get work done on your phone. you know, while you're waiting for the bus.
I mean, you're more disciplined than I am. Yeah. Or you can check out Instagram for 10 minutes.
How many times when I've been worried about my bank account have I been able to go online and transfer money into my checking account if I'm going to go out and, you know, go shopping or something with my phone? You know, and even though you can take your iPad with you, it's just bigger. It's more of a hassle.
It's a simple transaction. That's the reason why a lot of people, notebook sales are flattening off or down for most of the industry, because a lot of people are realizing that maybe I don't actually need even something that runs Windows or runs Mac OS because so much of the stuff that I do, I can do on my phone.
Yeah.
And then there's the social stuff. A lot of people complain about, oh, these kids today, they're spending so much time on their beep boops instead of interacting with people directly. And I think I posted something to Instagram this morning because my friends are going to have – this is an easy way to tell my friends I'm going to be on GBH today. And also, I'm sharing part of my life with them. I've never been more connected with my family and with my friends than by virtue of the fact that waiting for that bus, I can see pictures of my friend of mine who posts a picture of their kids from their bus stop privately to their groups. It's like, oh, she's wearing the butterfly clip that she was making last week in Scouts. Isn't that great?
Although you like that, huh?
We could probably do with a few less selfies, though, which I think we can also attribute
no,
to the
no
iPhone.
Duck lips, no products. Otherwise, I don't judge.
Yeah, okay. And some people get carried away with the baby pictures, too, Andy. Let's face it, right?
Yeah.
I mean, how many times do you have to remark on the beautiful new baby? I think 20 times is enough. What do you think?
Social anxiety is like, if I don't like it, am I saying I don't like it? It can be stressful.
Exactly.
Andy Iannatko is a technology columnist for the Chicago Sun-Times. Follow him on Twitter at Iannatko. Find him online at Iannatko.com. Andy Iannatko, thanks so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Coming up, Boston Police Commissioner Bill Evans is here to talk about the art of the peaceful protest and much more. He's next on 89.7 WGBH Boston Public Radio.
Hi, it's Jim Browdy. I'm not on the show today, but I am asking you to support Boston Public Radio anyway. If anything, the stories we've talked about this year prove the importance of independent journalism and analysis from sources you can trust. That's what you get here every day, and it only happens with your support. Marjorie, tell them what to do.
You know, it's funny, Jim, that you should say tell them what to do, because the only time I ever get to tell anybody what to do is when you're not here telling me what to do. Isn't that true, Jared Bowen?
I don't know anything about what you're talking about right now.
So I am in charge here today. There's no Jim Bradley telling me what to do. So let me tell you, we got the Public Radio Nerd Mug, and this is a great, it's an adorable little mug. You will love it. $120 in one fell swoop, or $10 a month on the Sustainer plan. It says WGBH on one side and the words Public Radio Nerd on the other. And again, $10 a month is I hope you feel like we're worth that. What is that, like two large cafe lattes or vanilla lattes or whatever? Something like that, right?
Something like that, yep.
Yeah. Something like that. So that's not very much. So I hope you can contribute. It means a lot to me. It means a lot to Jim. It means a lot to everybody here that works on our staff and everybody that's here, WGBH Radio and TV. We are so thrilled that you would take the time to listen to us and take the time to show how much that means by contributing.
And to become a new member, all you have to donate is $5 a month. That's all it takes to become a new member that supports us at WGBH, Boston Public Radio. I always like to talk about the arts. I am the arts editor here. We're one of the few broadcast outlets in all of New England that covers the arts as much as we do. I'm thrilled that I'm able to do that here, and it's only because of you. You donate at 888-897-9424 or go online at wgbhnews.org.
And remember, the Public Radio Nerd Mug is available now, is our way of saying thank you. $10 a month, $120 altogether, 888-897-9424 or WGBHnews.org. Okay, I have to say things are a little confused here today. We're going to blame the pledge. I'm getting the call letters wrong. You're getting the outs wrong over there. Andy Iannatko is not left. He is still here.
I'm so sorry I tried to dismiss you, Andy.
Actually, how many times have I ever heard, no, come back. We like you. We want you to stay. That was great. Right. I love that.
Yes. I was ready to chase you out the door. Did you see that?
Right. The police commissioner will be here after the noon news to take our calls and yours. But Andy's here for a couple more minutes. And we were talking about the 10-year anniversary of the iPhone for the next few minutes. The other thing I thought was so incredible. I mean, we've had the TomToms in the cars for a while. Now people have Waze and all these other things on their phones, of course. But when you're walking somewhere in a new city, one of my kids was overseas, for the junior year abroad kind of deal. And here I had my little GPS device so I'd know how to get like to the Eiffel Tower or whatever it was I was trying to get to. I could just look at my phone.
Yeah. The ability to just simply explore, particularly for people who don't have the opportunity to go to the Eiffel Tower, you can walk around the Eiffel Tower and see it from angles that never been photographed before. And the number of times I've gone just on a walk to someplace I've always dreamt of going and just walked random streets through Street View is just amazing.
Oh, that's a great point too, yeah. Street View.
I did. Actually, it was funny. There was a sculpture in the Bowery in Manhattan I wanted to see. And I knew I had like a half hour window to go see it. So I did all this reconnaissance in Street View, and also an app I also put on my phone. So where's the angle of the sun going to be? So I want to get pictures of it. And so when I got there, it was like 10 minutes. I found it immediately. I got it at the right time of day. But yeah, it's like especially now that Google is doing enhanced versions of Google Earth to essentially get groups of things. Well, do you want to see Mayan ruin sites right now? And do you want to see the history of how it was explored and overlay things on top of it? It's like, it's amazing. These kids are in such a great position. I'm so jealous of them.
Okay, so those are some of the amazing things. But I think we all have two bones to pick with Apple still, and that is in the time
Headphone jack.
I wasn't even going to go there. I was just going to say.
Oh, I was going there.
In the time that we were speaking, all of our batteries have drained. They're down to zero. And why can't they fix autocorrect still? Why is it still
really
doing terrible things to
I've
our text messaging?
I've embarrassed myself so many times when you send the wrong word, you know?
Yeah, there's actually some settings inside where you can actually specify how you would like things to be autocorrected.
Yeah.
All the way from saying, no, please don't. Don't tone my language down to don't change anything to all the way to no, there are things that I screw up and I want to tell you what they are so that you can always TEH always becomes the becomes TEH. Saying like whenever you see TEH, just don't even guess.
Way to go that on settings.
It's under settings, yeah. it's under keyboard, and you'll be able to find alternatives for everything.
You know what I like about Google Maps most, so Google Earth, whatever it is, where you can swoop down on all these houses, is to see where your ex-girlfriends and boyfriends live. You know, the ones that got away. Do they have a better house than I do? Or is my house better than theirs? You know, how does it look? Maybe you can, like, you know, get right down and see them at the pool, you know, if they done well, they have a swimming pool, that kind of stuff.
I've been tracking Jim Browdy all day on my live Google Earth. I know exactly where he is right now.
Oh, yeah? Is he slithering or is he behaving?
He is
himself?
Slithering.
He's slithering. I knew
you
it.
You called it.
Yeah. We should also point out that the negative thing is that, we've all volunteered to wear a tracking device at all times.
That's right. That is right.
Yeah. All right. Now pretend, all listeners, that you haven't heard what I'm about to say already, but Andy Iannotko is a technology columnist for the Chicago Sun-Times. More promotion for you.
Hey.
You follow him on Twitter at Iannotko, just at Iannotko. Find him online at Iannotko.com. Thank you so much for joining us again. Coming up for real this time, right after the 12 o'clock hour, Boston Police Commissioner Bill Evans will be talking about the art of the peaceful protest, new recruits, much, much more. He's next on 89.7 WGBH, Boston Public Radio.
This is Boston Public Radio on WGBH, made possible thanks to listener contributions. Your support of just $10 or $20 a month keeps all these great conversations coming your way. Please take a moment to give now at WGBHnews.org or call 888-897-9424.
Your financial support during our summer membership drive will ensure that the NPR News and WGBH programs you value remain on the radio in our community. Call 888-897-9424 or give online at WGBHnews.org. I am Andy Hicks here with Jack Callahan.
And we have just 6 contributions left to go in 6 minutes. Please join with other WGBH listeners and help pay for your BPR listening. That you can go online at WGBHnews.org or give us a call at 888-897-9424.
And I'm asking you to become a monthly contributor now to help WGBH sustain NPR. Each year, WGBH makes a financial commitment to NPR to help pay for the creation and broadcasting of its news programs. We send NPR $200,000 per quarter as part of that bill. Your sustaining membership of $10 or $20 per month helps WGBH honor that quarterly financial commitment and keeps NPR's news programs and local programs on WGBH on the air for you to hear. 888-897-9424 or WGBHnews.org.
Everyone who makes a contribution today is automatically entered into a special drawing celebrating the first day of this brief campaign. Some lucky supporter is going to win the new Amazon Echo Show, plus a $500 Amazon gift card to go with it. Now, $500 is enough to buy some electronics, a lot of books, kitchen gadgets, whatever else you may need. So the Amazon Echo Show is brand new. It's just coming out. In fact, in a week, Alexa can show you so many things. She's like your personal assistant right there. Alexa, put on BPR so I can hear it, please. Dim the lights just a little bit, and you can watch things. It's just a fabulous companion to have, courtesy of your generosity to WGBH if you're that winner. Again, everyone who enters, who calls with the contributions, automatically entered. The number is 888-897-9424. Or you can go online at wgbhnews.org.
And a new exciting gift that a lot of people are taking this time around is the WGBH Public Radio Nerd Mug. You can enjoy your favorite beverage and show that you're a smart WGBH supporter at the same time. It's black with the WGBH logo, and it has the words Public Radio Nerd. So nerd pride, folks. Sign on as a sustaining member at $10 a month and ask for the new WGBH Public Radio Nerd Mug. You will love showing this off around the office or wherever you go. You can also give $120 all at once. Call 888-897-9424 or give online at wgbhnews.org.
You know, giving takes just a few minutes of your time. We need your name and contact information, which we keep private, by the way. Become a monthly sustaining member using your Visa, MasterCard, Discover, or American Express. Or go ahead and make a one-time contribution. But please give now before this hour slips away. Still looking for six more, I believe. 888-897-9424 or WGBHnews.org.
And don't forget, if you support WGBH, you'll have a chance to win the brand new Amazon Echo Show, plus a $500 Amazon gift card to go along with it. The Amazon Echo Show can show you things and watch. You can watch video, flash briefings, and YouTube, see music lyrics, security cameras, photos, and to-do lists, and it's all hands-free. You just talk to it. They've been talking on the program today about hands-free and you know, that sort of thing where you could talk to your device and how Amazon's doing a really great job with it. This is the perfect combination of things where it's like Alexa. You speak to it. It's also like your Amazon Kindle Fire. You can watch things on it, and you can say, hey, Echo, I want to see this. It is brilliant. We live in the future. You could win one. Don't miss out because the deadline is 7 p.m. 888-897-9424 or give online at wgbhnews.org.
You know, maybe you started listening to WGBH for BPR, but you found other programs you like, including All Things Considered, The Takeaway, maybe even Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, and In the Middle of the Day, all the programs that you like. Call 888-897-9424. Be one of the heroes that we need in these remaining minutes of the hour.
And we want to thank a couple of people. We want to thank Mary Lou in Cambridge, Martha in Sterling, and Candy in Auburn, New Hampshire, who says, I absolutely adore Jim and Marjorie. Your show is my favorite ever. Thank you so much, Candy. We need to hear from three more people. We're just updating this right now before the end of this hour, just a couple minutes to get there. These hourly goals are vital. They help us stay on track and figure out where exactly we are with this campaign. We're off to a great start, but we need to hear from you. 888-897-9424, wgbhnews.org.
Hey, let's let Marjorie and Jared keep their head held high in Jim's absence, so when he comes back, they can say, yeah, Jim, we still hit the goal. Our listeners still showed up and supported without you here. Call 888-897-9424. It's about Marjorie's head held high. And don't forget, when you do call, you'll be automatically entered into this drawing, this fabulous drawing for an Amazon Echo Show. Again, the number 888-897-9424. Online gifts count too at wgbhnews.org.
And maybe you gave last time around. That's absolutely fantastic. Glad you did. Thank you so much. We spent it, and we spent it covering the economy. We spent it covering health and science. We spent it covering local and national events. Your contribution helps us bring you the news and commentary and conversations and so much more. Please give during this fund drive so we can do even more. 888-897-9424 is the number to call. wgbhnews.org.
Coming up on Boston Public Radio, in a crackdown on gang violence, the Boston Police Department and other agencies arrested 17 people and confiscated 22 firearms. Boston Police Commissioner Bill Evans says this is a warning to every gang member that your gang is next. He joins us for the hour to talk about this and to take our questions and yours.
I'm Jared Bowen, and for Jim Browdy, this week, local violinist Amy Sims lost her $40,000 violin at South Station. When MBTA police reunited her with it, tears came to her eyes. She never knew until that moment how much that violin meant to her. We're opening up the lines and asking you about your own lost and found experiences, from the sublime to the ridiculous. From there, it's a look at how big box stores are crushing local independent wine shops like a grape. Jonathan Alsop joins us for that and more next on Boston Public Radio.
Welcome back to Boston Public Radio. Jared Bowen is in for vacationing Jim Browdy. I am Marjorie Egan, and we are being joined by Boston Police Commissioner Bill Evans. He's here to take our questions and yours. You can email the commissioner at bpr@wgbh.org. You can tweet him at Boss Public Radio, or you can call at 877-301-8970, 877-301-8970. Police Commissioner Evans, thank you very much for coming in today.
Thanks for having me.
So you guys got a big increase in your force. You have 56 new members of the Boston Police Department. I read about that in the Boston Globe today.
Yeah.
That's pretty exciting. What difference does that make in terms of the patrolling the city?
Well, it helps. You know, we're in our busy season through the summer. June, July, and August is usually, you know, we usually experience a little uptick in the violence. So the great majority of those are going to Mattapan, Dorchester, and Roxbury. So it's a good addition to our summer strategy, in addition to all the community programs and all the kids' programs and what the mayor has, getting all these city kids jobs. And, you know, so, you know, we're working. And that's a big piece of our summer strategy of making the city streets safe. And, you know, it was a great graduation. I think for the first time we had a Korean and a Cambodian officer.
Yeah, I saw
on
that.
That was pretty good. And, you know, obviously, as the city becomes more diversified, we're continually trying to get more and more diversity, which, as you know, is always a challenge.
How was that for a number of recruits? Because, of course, there has been so much talk about police departments suffering, that people are reluctant to get into the business now, given how much has happened with police departments across the country. There are a lot of people who just don't want to be embroiled in that kind of atmosphere. Right. So is this a good number of recruits for you? Do you see things ticking up, or are you struggling to get people?
Well, I think the last exam we have, our numbers were down in the entrance exam. I think we had about 1,600 people take it. We is back, I think. You know, sometimes it was, at least when we came on, it was thousands of people. So we are seeing a decline. And, but last time we put out a substantial effort in trying to recruit, and we're going to continue to do that. But we have another class going on in August, which is great. Mayor Walsh has been a big supporter of keeping the numbers up, and public safety is a big priority here. So we're hoping to put on another 100 the first week of August. So, we're having a lot of retirements, and we're trying to keep up with them.
We're talking to Boston Police Commissioner Bill Evans. If you want to call again, the number is 877-301-8970. The email is bpr@wgbh.org. You know, I want to .org, rather. I wanted to talk about this incredible story about Orchard Park, the housing development that has basically been under siege for quite some time by a group of gang members. And congratulations to the Boston Police. I know you had help from the state and federal law enforcement. But tell people, Commissioner, about what life has been like at the Orchard Park development and this arrest of this drug-dealing gang.
We took out 12, what we call gang kids out of that development. And it was, gang unit, our special investigation unit was working on that investigation for some time. And we were able to get, a significant amount of guns with them off the street. But, when we did the press conference, I mentioned that one of the kids we got was one of the kids whose baby was shot down there, 2-year-old, and who wouldn't cooperate with us that night. And I remember
he was in the car with the father, right?
Yeah,
the baby.
I remember being down in the hospital, and I felt so bad for the 2-year-old, but here was the father who wouldn't tell us anything about what happened. And not that I was, I'm never happy to see that a child get hit like that, but, you know, we did end up taking him in this particular raid, because he was involved, heavily involved in the gang violence, and that's probably why his unfortunately, the collateral damage was his 2-year-old. So sad when young kids, collateral damage from these people being involved. So I know the residents are thrilled down there. You know, we do peace walks every Friday, and we start at the 12th Baptist Church, and, you know, we walk up St. James Street, we walk through Dudley Station, and, you know, it's great. I love to meet the community, all my command staff, and then we go over to Orchard Park, and a week early I could see all these kids just hanging around, and as we're approaching them, you know, we're getting the dirty looks, and eventually they scatter, but it was nice the following week to see, based on the body camera, believe it or not, which was very helpful, we were able to use the body cameras to have pictures of them all, and we had each name. So
as you walk by, the police officers had the body cameras?
Well, the officers in the district had used the body cameras to basically film all these gang kids. And,
okay.
And so when we went after who, we had a nice picture over their name, and so the body cameras are working out real well. For us, in capturing, and it was instrumental here.
What happens after something like this when you have 17 arrests? Does this essentially cripple the gang? What kind of impact does it have?
Well, I wouldn't say cripple. It's never crippled. There's always a little bit of a void, and younger kids might come up. But I think it sends a message. And the 2 days before, we went after the Wendover Cameron Street gang, and that was, we got 17 members, the 2 days prior to that, and we got a significant amount of guns. Probably in the 2 days, I think we got 34 guns and locked up 29 members. So that makes a big difference, especially that's probably the two more back and forth gangs we've had over the last 2 years, Cameron and Wendover. So that, these really, and now we're on to a couple other gangs.
So 17 out of how many gang members do you think there would be?
I have no number, but I'm sure, there's probably, another down Orchard Park, maybe another dozen or so that we're still after.
You know, two more things I'm very interested in this story about. Number one, we're always talking about the president's immigration crackdown and how we got an Irish guy last week. That was a new one. I hadn't heard about people going after Irish immigrants. But anyway, in this particular arrest, there was a 24-year-old man who was charged with being an alien in possession of a firearm and distribution of a cocaine base, deported to the Dominican Republic. So right. This person was arrested as a person that was here. You shaking my head? You shaking your head? Okay.
Deported a long time ago.
Oh, he was deported a long time ago. So this wasn't... Yeah. Wait, well, how could he just have been arrested if he was deported a long time ago? What's the story with this guy?
Well, I think it was prior to this takedown, he was already deported. But he was part of the investigation when it first started, Marjorie. Uh-huh. That's the difference on that.
Why was he deported, though?
Well, I think because he had some violent offenses in his background.
Okay, so the point I'm making is that when someone is arrested with violent offenses, it's not like you're letting these people...
And that's been our position from the get-go. You know, we're not going to go after, immigrants because they, they're shoplifting or they run a red light or minor offenses. Yeah. But if someone's violent and they're, have violent offenses and they use a gun and they're... we're going to notify ICE, and, people don't want to see, people who are going to, heaven forbid, kill someone in this country.
And the second thing, this gang was dealing drugs near the Orchard Park School. People may know it's on Melnia Cass, as you head out of the city. It's that bright orange, yellow, red. It was all redone a few years ago and has made a dramatic turnaround in terms of the quality of education there. And it's also, there's a big low-income housing development there, the Orchard Park Housing Development. So when you have gangs like this operating so boldly outside and right within these developments, what does that mean for the quality of life of the people that are there?
Well, it's sad. And that's why, we set up these things and they're time intensive, but
You have kids. You have these guys hanging on the corner,
right? We have
where kids are playing.
And they're sitting on the stoop, and that's why we're continually out trying to target them. But it takes a while to build cases on them. Obviously we have to make drug deals. A lot of these kids were into trafficking firearms. So we work with the ATF. We work with the state and our federal partners, and we have to build substantial cases, hopefully, to put these people away for a long time.
But one last thing, too, I don't mean to obsess over this, but if you are a little kid and you see the tough guys hanging around the corner and there are problems in the home and maybe your own dad is not in the home, you can see where young children can get sucked into this lifestyle.
I always say it, Marjorie, I feel bad for the young kids when I'm walking around because a lot of these kids don't have a prayer. You know, they live, you know, when other kids are in summer camps or, you know, they're on their house down the Cape and they're swimming places. These kids, you know, they don't have a whole lot. They're stuck in the developments in the heat of the summer and, you know, and it always breaks your heart. And that's why, you know, Mayor Walsh, all of us are working to try to keep these kids in the camps. You know, we work very closely with the YMCA. And we put youth at-risk kids in camps for week-long camps. The YMCA opens all their doors for nothing in the summer, working with Josh Crass and the Boys and Girls Club.
Yeah.
Same thing, trying to get these kids into a safe environment. We also, BCYF, the city's programs, open up the community centers longer, the pools longer. So we're working to try to take these kids so they're not around some of the bad influences that can be around them.
All right, we have some callers patiently waiting. Let's go to Judy in Ashland. Hi, Judy.
Oh, hi. My name's Judy. Thank you, Commissioner, for all the great work you do with youth prevention and drugs. My question actually relates somewhat because it's concerning the cannabis legislation that's in play here at the State House. I was wondering if you could comment on the words that are being used around that legislation. What's been talked about a lot are the words recreational marijuana dispensary in terms of the non-medical use of retailers selling cannabis. So the word recreational to a 13-year-old, I was wondering what you think a 13-year-old would think of a drug use as being recreational. Might that be something more like swimming? And should we possibly be using non-medical cannabis retailers instead of calling it recreational marijuana dispensaries being pharmacies?
Well, I'm not. I've been against the recreational or non-medical use of it from the get-go. You know, I think we have enough drug issues, and, you know, we're constantly seeing that every day, you know, with the opiate crisis here in the city. And, you know, I'm not a big fan of, you know, any type of, obviously the medical, I can see that. But, you know, I'm fearful that younger and younger these kids are going to be using it. And, you know, people are going to be behind the wheel, impaired. And, you know, I know this is a hot-button issue, but I have, from the get-go, not been a big supporter of, you know, the recreational use of it. But you're right, that term seems like it's something it's fun. I guess it's fun to the people who use it, but, you know, I have problems with that we're going to be opening up pot shops in our neighborhoods.
We're talking with Boston Police Commissioner Bill Evans. This is a perennial story. Another one popped up yesterday in the Boston Globe that the highest paid city employee is a Boston police detective who made $403,000 last year. Of course, most of this was in overtime. His base salary was just $92,515. A lot of people get outraged when they see just the figure, first of all, right, that he makes more than you, he makes more than the mayor. But I think
he makes more than the president. How much does the president make? President make $400,000 now?
Well,
of course, he's not taking his salary. He's not taking his salary,
that's true.
President
that's
Trump.
True.
I think that's what Obama made, maybe $450,000.
But he earned a lot of this by working more than 1,100 hours of overtime. So more than the money, I look at a situation like this and I think, how can he work effectively when he's working tirelessly, like that?
Well, the number so high last year was because a lump sum of that was retroactive pay because the detectives settled a new contract. So a big part of probably over 100,000 of it was from past contracts. So, but, you know, clearly we monitor how much officers work. We have a 90-hour rule a week that they can't go over and so many hours over a month. But I think a lot of his overtime, believe it or not, is he's a domestic violence detective. So he's in court every day because that's the issues we have. We have domestic violence officers in every district, and you know, he's in a busy district. And I would say probably most of our domestic violence detectives every day are in court, because that's probably the biggest issue we have in the city. And, you know, they investigate, they follow up with the victims, they do a lot of advocacy with the victim advocates. And so it's unfortunately too busy a job in the city of Boston. And so he works his regular shift, and for most of the part, he's in court.
But, Commissioner, I'm going to annoy you by asking you this, but I can't.
You annoy me arguing anyway.
You know, you look at this, and you're not as bad as some other police departments. I remember at the Herald doing a story on one particular police department that at the time, if you had a half-hour detail, you got paid for 8 hours. I believe that was Gloucester. Was it not Gloucester?
I'm not sure.
Well, anyway, you're getting paid for 8 hours. And part of this is a little bit of a scam. I know you didn't negotiate this. This was negotiated a long time ago between the union and the cops. But if you have a minimum detail and you're going to wherever you're going, maybe you're going to St. Mary's to direct traffic or something, and it's a half hour, you're getting paid for 4 hours. And if you go down to the court and it ends up a half hour, it ends up being 4 hours. So what happens is you have police officers getting paid for hours they don't work. And this total added up to $60 million in overtime. Now, that was not work. A lot of that was work. But to the average person, it does seem like sort of a scam.
And let me just add to that. In the Globe reports, in Lee's case, this is the detective, that he did not work 674 of the hours that he was paid for.
Yeah, again, it's a contractual thing. And when I came on the job 32 years ago, that was in place. When I went to court, whether I was there for 3 hours and 55 minutes, I got 4 hours. If you go to the case, as soon as you get there, they say, and it happens quite a bit. You know, a lot of the defense and process, they can keep continuing cases. And so a lot of times you go there, and right off the bat, they say, yeah, the defense isn't ready, the drugs aren't ready. And, you know, if you're only there 10 minutes, you get 4 hours. And so that's been a practice before I came on the job. And, yeah, you know, I know it's for the public, it doesn't look good, but it's been a contractual obligation as far as I can remember back. And unfortunately, the salaries with the cost of living are going up for those 4 hours. And now, you know, the numbers are, you know, they're big, but there's not a whole lot unless we go back to the bargain table and, you know, change it.
So back when you were a patrolman, did you ever make more money in a year as a patrolman with all those details than you're making now as commissioner?
One year I was the top earner. When I was the captain down District 4.
Really?
I did. You know,
did you go to Europe, or what did you do with the money?
Well, I didn't buy pot like you.
Well, it's getting hot in here now.
Just kidding, Marjorie. But
it's okay. It's okay. You can buy a lot of pot with $40,000. I'll tell you that. You have it until you're dead and buried.
But you know what? When you work, like when I worked as a captain down District 4, you're a lot of responsibilities. Every weekend was parades, 81 home games at Fenway Park. You know,
that's tough duty.
It is when you leave your house at 7 o'clock in the morning.
Okay.
And then at 4 o'clock, you're going up to Fenway Park, and then you're getting home at midnight every night.
True.
And so, you know, I work, you know, very hard. And, you know, in that year, because there's so much going on in that district, I was the top earner.
Well, congratulations to you.
It's long gone, though. You know, I put two through college. I got one more to go. So
our number is 877-301-8970. If you want to call the commissioner, he's with us until the top of the hour at 1 o'clock, 877-301-8970. And bpr@wgbh.org is the email. Let's go to Benjamin in Danvers. Hi, Benjamin.
Hi, Commissioner, we go way back. I used to work for Patty Papa back when you became captain.
Oh, hi, Benjamin.
In the Office of Special Events. And it's good to see you. You've had such a great career. You're doing a great job for the city, and I really appreciate it.
Thank you.
A question. I'm the guy that got hit by the one-armed man on Divine Way. When we dedicated the park to the war hero, and I'm the guy that got hit by the war hero.
Oh, wow. Sorry to hear that.
Oh.
You doing all right?
But I'm doing fine now, yeah.
Oh, good.
Anyway, my question is, how would you contrast the current administration with Mayor Menino? I mean, we graduated so many officers back in Mayor Menino's administration. You guys had what seemed to be an incredible relationship. How would you contrast that with the current administration?
Well, I think Mayor Walsh is doing a great job. You know, he's constantly, anything I ask him for, he gives me. You know, he doesn't interfere with the running of the department at all. And, you know, there's no bigger supporter of the police and all public safety than Mayor Walsh. And, you know, and I think Mayor Menino is the same way. I think both of them were very supportive of law enforcement because, honestly, if you don't have a safe city, then nothing else works. And I think, you know, Mayor Walsh really recognizes that. And I think, you know, since he's come on board, I think crime has gone down pretty significantly in the city. You know, the homicide rate last year was almost at an all-time low. Year-to-date, so far this year, we're 10% down overall crime than last year, and our violent crime is 6% down. So, and our arrests have been down, so all the numbers are trending in the right direction. So I think we had two great mayors, and I hate to compare them because I think they both did a great job.
Our number again is 877-301-8970. Benjamin, thank you for the call. Commissioner, there's been some disturbing stories about this video that showed a police officer and a dog wearing a cast, and the setup was, quote, in the fight between good and evil, evil comes an unlikely pair. And then it shows these images of black women. I think it's from the Caribbean Festival at the end of the year. And there's a text saying, this summer, black people have met their match. I know that the Internal Affairs Division is looking at this, and it's not clear whether the officer in the video had anything to do with posting this thing. But, you know, you think about that Philando Castile earlier this week, and people may know he's the young man from Minnesota that was shot multiple times by a police officer in his car when he was, and you may have seen his girlfriend got the whole thing on Facebook, and he was acquitted of all charges, including even dangerous disarming a discharge of a firearm. So you can see where, if you are an African-American in Boston and you see this video, this is pretty disturbing stuff.
Well, again, it is, and we're going to deal with it, and hopefully very swiftly. I'm almost at the end of concluding with the investigation. But, you know, it's not what we're all about. I think our officers work hard every day to build the community trust. You know, we're out there in the schools, in the playgrounds, and building that trust. So when something like this happens, it is disturbing. But I can tell you, you know, we're going to deal with it swiftly, and you know, and there'll be punishment. Believe me, I can't get into too much of the details, but you know, I was very disturbed by it. I expect better of my officers. You know, I was over to the new academy class before they graduated, and I talked about the dangers of social media, as you're saying, and the whole idea of unconscious bias. I know Superintendent Holmes does a great job in the academy. So
tell me describe that for people, unconscious bias.
Well, the whole idea that, you know, basically there's perceptions that, you know, that when you grow up in your home that you have different views of different nationalities. And whether you agree with it or not, it's built in. And so she tries to do a great job in trying to make sure people understand that. And they're very careful in all aspects of the job, and to recognize that. So you're not, the minute you see, you know, say an Asian man walking down the street, you don't have stereotypes of black males. And so she tries to wipe out all those stereotypes in the academy. And we do a great job. And I think this was basically the kid thinking it was a joke. I can tell you it wasn't the kid who was shown in the video. Someone, one of his pals was playing a joke. But it's a joke that hurt some people, and we're going to deal with it.
What do you think of that Philando Castile verdict? I know you weren't on the jury, but when you see a video of a police officer shooting someone multiple times inside their car.
Yeah, I mean, I haven't. Someone told me there's a new video out this week. Mm-hmm. I didn't get a peek at it, but, you know, again, all I worry about is my department. I don't want to get into casting, you know, whether I think he was right or not. Obviously, there's been some videos out there that have been very disturbing to me that makes us all look bad as a profession.
Yeah.
Like, you know, I've seen, what was it, the one in Chicago there?
The young man was walking away from the police officers, and they shot him multiple times.
And that one really bothered me.
Yeah.
And there was one in South Carolina with a guy running away, and they just shot the poor black kid in the back.
Yep.
You know, that makes us all look bad, and those officers should be held accountable. This one here, honestly, I didn't see the newest one out, but you know, it's always troubling when these incidents happen because it puts a perception on all of us no matter, even if, you know, even if we're doing the right thing, that we're all that way. And that's why we have to work harder in the communities so they trust us and see us for what we are, not what happens in Chicago, not what happens in, you know, Milwaukee just had an officer off. And, you know, Seattle, I've been following Seattle where that mother with four children, you know, pregnant, was shot. You know, when people see that, it makes our job a lot more difficult.
Well, on that point, what faith do you feel that the community has in you? And because I was struck by this, there was an editorial in the Globe about this, about the video that came out of your department, that has applauded you for your efforts to keep in touch with the community, to keep all lines of communication open. But it also says such progress is so fragile that it can be quickly undone. And do you feel like you're walking a tightrope?
All the time, I do. And, you know, on this video, I've been talking to a lot of community members to get their sense of the impact it's had. And so, you know, I've talked to clergy, I've talked to heads of organizations, I'm talking to a lot of people on this video, because when I make my decision on it, I want to make sure I get it right. And, you know, we work together here as a community, and I don't want that trust between our department, who I think do a super job every day, I don't want it to be hurt by one stupid incident.
Our number is 877-301-8970. Let's go to Wendy in the car. Hi, Wendy. You're on with Commissioner Bill Evans, Boston Police Commissioner, I should say, Bill Evans.
Hello, Marjorie. Hello, Jared. Hello, Commissioner. I do have a question. I wonder, the voters of Massachusetts voted in civilian flaggers 3 years ago, and I don't happen to see those people with
jobs. Did we vote them?
I know that it was a way to reduce the budget for police officers, and you talked about yourself being the top earner, police commissioner, and in that way, I know that you did details for, you said Fenway Park and stuff like that, which is, you said you work hard. I admit you work long hours, but that might be a position where somebody who earns less money than a police officer actually could get paid to do.
And Wendy, excuse me for 1 second. I don't think we voted them in. I think Deval Patrick changed the law, saying that flaggers were allowed on certain projects, mass state highway projects and cul-de-sacs. But they're not. There's no flaggers in Boston or a lot of cities. I don't think. But go ahead, Wendy. I didn't mean to interrupt.
No. I don't know. Check. I felt as though once that had been, you know, the following day, the day after the elections and the results came through, that civilian flaggers were overwhelmingly supported by the voters of Massachusetts, because it would reduce costs and it would allow the budget to have money for better projects. I mean, I have no objection to police officers actually applying for that job if they want extra work on the side. I'm just thinking that there's a way to get them to reduce their overtime and have the hours go to folks who might actually need a job.
Wendy, thanks for the call.
Well, the problem sometimes is, like, you know, we've been flat out the last week with the tall ships, and a lot of officers who probably had plans this weekend had them canceled because they were all ordered to work. And at the same time as that was going on, we had a Grateful Dead-type concert going on at Fenway for two nights, which was took a lot of our personnel. We had a Juneteenth celebration going on at Franklin Park, as well as a big event at the Lawn on D. Plus, where my priority is in the neighborhoods, making sure, especially Roxbury, Mattapan, Dorchester, that, you know, we have plenty of officers in those neighborhoods, so we don't have the gun violence, and, you know, I want my officers to be visible. So, you know, we're always in the summertime with special events. You know, a lot of the officers, whether they want to work or not, they have to work.
All right, Boston Police Commissioner Bill Evans is with us until the top of the hour. He's taking our questions and yours. We are keeping this hour with the police commissioner pledge-free, but if you'd like to do your part, call now at 888-897-9424. You're listening to 89.7 WGBH Boston Public Radio.
Welcome back to Boston Public Radio. Jared Bowen is in for the vacationing, slithering about town. Jim Browdy. Our number is 877-301-8970. That's the number to call to reach the Boston Police Commissioner. Bill Evans is with us to the top of the hour. The email is bpr@wgbh.org. I want to talk to you about the tall ships in just a second, but first we should get to some of our calls because we have been remiss. Steve in Attleboro, thank you for calling, Steve.
Good morning, Commissioner Marjorie.
Hi.
I heard the commissioner when I was joining in saying as far as illegal immigrants are concerned, he wouldn't necessarily go after them if they were speeding or going after a red light. If they're here illegally, I mean, that's enough for me. If they commit another act against the law like that, I feel they should be gone after. What level would they have to rise to, in your eyes, to go after?
Well, I think I've said before, you know, if they commit a violent felony here, something of whether they obviously kill someone, shoot someone, possess a gun, or they're involved in these violent gangs, I think clearly I would like to see them turned over to ICE. That's the type of stuff. I think, you know, again, I think as the mayor always says, and I said, a lot of us, our grandparents were immigrants who came over here. And, there's only a small fraction who actually ever commit some of these atrocious acts. And so I don't think you paint everybody the same because you have a few who really become violent. But I've said from the get-go, we're not the immigration police at all, but if someone commits a violent act, then we're going to report them to ICE.
Steve, thank you very much for the call. Commissioner, let's talk about the tall ships. I was surprised when I was reading about the tall ships that there's a level, they're ranked, these events, and you know the tall ship, for example, was a level one security event and the Boston Marathon.
Yeah, it was a SEER 1. This was a SEER 1 event.
Yeah, and the Boston Marathon, even with the bombing that happened, was a SEER 2. So why was the tall ships such a high-level security event?
I think that, again, comes from the federal government, the rating. And I think it was a couple factors, obviously because of what's going on around the world every day with acts of violence and terrorism. Number two, I think it's because it's an international event. And you had, you know, Chilean ships, you had German ships, you had all kinds of different countries, which sort of makes it a ripe event to hit an international event. But there was no, and I tried to get out there as much as I could to say, this has nothing to do with a threat at all to the city. You know, there was no intelligence. It was just, I think, on the side of precaution that the federal government had said it. And I was a little, you know, on Saturday, looking over, you know, the whole setup, I kept trying to tamp that down because I think people seen that. I think some people were intimidated and thought that there was more to it, that we knew something that they didn't know.
There were a lot of police. You saw a lot of police
on
the ground.
There was, and I think because it had that rating, that we all had to step up our game. And unfortunately, I hope that didn't scare people off, but in the days leading up to it, I was trying to reinforce to people, that doesn't mean that we have information that you don't. It was a rating that was given months out about this event, and but knock on wood, they're leaving today. We had a great, 5 days in the city.
It was pretty neat.
Yeah, and I was walking around down there. The crowds were excited, and everyone seemed to have a great time. So there was really a good buzz in the city when they were here.
Yeah.
Well, of course, before I say that, let me just, there's Jay, an emailer, said that he can't get through in the lines. If you can't get through in the lines, as always, you can just email your question at bpr@wgbh.org. We'll try to ask that as well. So, Jay, I know you're frustrated you can't get through in the lines, so just email us too. But, Commissioner, so Sail Boston is about to be over, but looming in the next couple of weeks is the 4th of July. What level is that, and how are you preparing for that in this climate?
Again, it's always a high level. I think we work with the state police, but I can tell you, I don't worry so much about these events, honestly. Like I said to you in the tall ships and what I say about July 4th, what keeps me awake is what happens in the neighborhoods, really. I think we always have a good plan, and I have confidence in my people to protect the Esplanade and the state police. I did with the tall ships. July 4th tends to be a violent weekend for us in the city, you know, when the weather gets warm, unfortunately. And so as we approach July 4th, I'm confident July 4th, you know, everything's great there. So I honestly, I worry that I have plenty of officers in some of the neighborhoods that we continually have the gun violence. You throw all the fireworks into, which, you know, people have to be reminded, in Massachusetts, fireworks are illegal, but every year they seem to be getting worse and worse.
They're worse. Do you know what I have to do, Commissioner? I have to get tranquilizers for my dog now every 4th of July because he can't take the stress of the fireworks.
But to add to you, you know, we'll have a great plan down there. But, you know, we put out a lot of additional officers throughout the summer in those neighborhoods because traditionally with the house parties, with everything going on, July 4th means, you know, that it's a great event, but all my focus is somewhere else.
Commissioner, you know, you mentioned the neighborhoods, and you talked a lot when you've been on with us about peace walks and unity walks and so forth. There was a Father's Day event in a unity walk in Boston. So why do you think that and you went and the mayor went and a lot of fathers went, a lot of kids went. Why do these things matter, do you think?
Well, I think they matter because, you know, Tina Cherry and her group does a great...
Who's a saint.
Who does a great Mother's
She's
Day
unbelievable.
March. And the turnout and the enthusiasm, that's always in May.
Yeah.
And it's a good way to start thinking about the summer and us all working together. And I remember I met with my chief and we said, why can't we do a Father's Day March? And so that was our idea to get that going with the same idea. All the fathers, all of us coming out to say that we're going to work together to make sure we have a great summer. And so it's just the way of keeping the momentum going along with the peace walks. And we also have a bike peace ride coming up very shortly. And so we want to keep the momentum going. We want to work with the community, everyone rallying together to make sure, you know, the summer goes well without, you know, too many young kids getting shot and having, unfortunately, some homicides in our city. So it's about sticking together, working together, so we have a safe city.
You know, you're on the streets every day worrying about the safety of people that live in Boston, but I'm always struck in the times I've gone to these different marches how many people, at least half if not more, have T-shirts on with pictures. And the pictures are of the often a child that they've lost to violence. The pictures of their son or their daughter on their T-shirt.
Yeah, it breaks your heart. You know, you have children. I have children. I can't even believe what that must be like to go on after losing a young child. And you know, that's one of the things we've really done to sort of help train our officers. You know, Mona Lisa Smith comes into our academy and their group, Mothers for Justice and Equality. They come into our academy class and they talk to all our new recruits about what a mother goes through and the whole experience of a child lying on the street and the whole reaction. I think that's powerful for my officers, but, you know, my heart goes out to them. You know, I see them at the scene. You almost want to go over and just hug them and say, I'm sorry. And but the good thing is Mayor Walsh now this year has really gotten the trauma teams up and running. So we have five separate trauma teams to address the whole city 24/7. So about 10 days ago, we had a homicide on Del Mar Street and on Hosmer. And from the scene, we were calling the trauma teams out who work with all the mothers, all the children, anyone who might have been impacted by the violence.
And what's the trauma team? Explain that.
Well, the trauma team is, there's about 3 to 5 people on it who come out. They're trained clinicians in dealing with grieving. Okay. And Reverend Mark Scott, he's taken the charge. So anytime we have a bad shooting, I'll call Mark and say, hey, can you get the city's trauma team up here? And it's a way to help not only calm the situation down, but help the families who might have, young kids who might have witnessed the violence or might have seen the craziness around it. So, you know, that young child's going to have to live with that forever. And again, when I talk to you about it breaks your heart. You know, when I see the elderly looking out their windows or on their porch and they're looking down at just having to deal with that and see that in these young kids, you know, it shows you how tough some neighborhoods really have it in the city.
All right, let's return to some of our calls. Let's go to Tori in Quincy. Hi, Tori.
Hi. Oh, my gosh. This is the first time I've ever gone through. I was wondering, the commissioner said he was opposed to legal weed and compared it to opioids. And I think that that's insane because nobody's ever died from weed. It's not the same thing. And states that have legalized marijuana have 25% lower opioid-related deaths.
Well, again, I didn't want, in the sense that I know opiates a lot worse. I'm just saying the last thing we need to do is introduce a new drug. And opiate, please, between fentanyl and all these drugs, they're so deadly. They have nothing compared to marijuana. I just don't like the idea of, you know, having kids think it's okay, recreational, at a younger and younger age to start smoking pot. Next thing you know, we'll have kids in grammar school and high school. If we sort of say it's no big deal, then that's my concern. I don't want to see young kids, any kids, walking around impaired. But by no means do I think it's anything like opiate. We see that, unfortunately, every day with the amount of overdoses across the country and the amount of deaths and good parents burying their young children because they experimented with drugs. So, you know, please, you know, marijuana, I know it's a lot less harmful, but I'm just worried about just introducing another drug and saying it's okay.
Let's go to Jeff in Newton. Hi, Jeff.
Hi, I had a question about policing at events like the Tall Ships, which I was at yesterday, and it's great. But why is it not just the Boston police, but state police and all others, you see clumps of them in two or three standing around chatting? And it seems to me for both ability to spot problems and for reassuring the public that there's a strong police presence, they ought to disperse.
Right. Well, again, it's one of my pet peeves too, Jim. I do parades with them. I do. They sometimes like to talk to each other.
You can't pry them apart.
I know. But, you know, it is. We're continually asking them, hey, spread out. And so we're always working on that. I'm sorry about that, but it's a pet peeve of mine too. We're marathon day and different, but we're getting better at it. But I agree with you. I think nothing's worse than seeing five cops standing around chatting, and the whole perception by people seeing that is what good is that? So it bothers me, and we're continually trying to get these officers to spread out.
What about the cell phone usage? What's the policy there?
Well, again, same thing. We try to discourage it, but again, they're getting calls from their family. They're getting calls, from the office, and we try not to always get them off. And sometimes too, they're calling the regional intelligence unit to try to get information, or they're calling. So, I can't have a clear policy. But which gets me to my next pet peeve is, the cell use and driving. I know legislature always takes up that whole idea of hands-free driving.
Yeah.
I'm a big advocate of it. I see so many people riding down the street, distracted driving. And I know there's a law about texting, but it's really non-enforceable to us because you don't know whether they're dialing to make a phone call or they're texting. But I think the best way to deal with that is just say that you can't be either calling or texting on your phone, and you got to have the technology so it's hands-free.
That's the voice of Police Commissioner Bill Evans. He'll be with us at the top of the hour. Now, Jay has been complaining that we ignore him and he can't get through and we don't answer his email. So here is an email, Jay, just for you. He wants to know, Commissioner Evans, how the police justify using body cameras that are meant to help stop shootings when officers seem to never be held responsible, no matter how egregious, and yet the police are abusing them to surveil the community and create cases to convict citizens, not police officers.
Well, knock on wood, we don't have to use our handguns here too much. I think we've shown we use quite a lot of restraint. I think we got almost 330 guns off the street so far this year. I think he's, again, like I said earlier, he's perceiving what's going on in other parts of the country and bringing it here to us. And knock on wood, we haven't had any situations lately on that. And, the body cameras, it's a pilot program. It's probably wrapping up the end of September. But we've found, really, that we haven't got a lot of complaints where anyone has really asked for it. But we're also seeing that we've been able to use it in court. We've been able to use it in some of these investigations. And so, there really hasn't been a big issue around the body cameras since we started it.
Let's go to Jack in Waltham. Hi, Jack.
Hi, Commissioner Evans. I'm calling
a bunch of years ago, a great cop named Jack Devine arrested me and saved my life. I was a drug addict, and they got me carrying enough GHB to send me to federal prison for 10 years, but I was lucky enough to have not been in trouble before. I got to continue without a finding, et cetera. But I just got a letter concerning this toucan lab snafu, and both of my convictions were vacated. I'm wondering, you know, I never did anything wrong again. I never got arrested again. Right. Never. You know, but there's a lot of guys out there who did. And there's a lot of people out there who you know, because of this woman, are probably getting, I'm guessing released from jail, or otherwise. And I'm wondering what the impact has been on the city of Duquesne.
Yeah, that's Annie Duquesne. She was the chemist who was misreporting, claiming right. people had drugs on them and didn't, and thousands of cases had to be thrown out. But go ahead, Commissioner.
Yeah, I don't. You know, I think we put a lot of resources into a lot of her. You know, some of the individuals who got put away being re-released into the community. I know we did a lot on reentry, both on the state level and the city level. So I don't think we've really seen a significant impact on, you know, on the community when victims were released. I think I just read today how someone just won a settlement against her for like $2 million. And today, I thought I read that in today's
yeah.
paper. So
yeah, I think
people are going after her civilly. For being wrong, but as far as our role goes, we really haven't seen any, you know, like when people were released, we didn't see a significant impact in crime, or so. Knock on wood, it really didn't have much impact on city.
You know what I wonder, Commissioner? You had the bulldozers out for the tall ships, right? Did you have bulldozers out at the tall ships?
Well, we had snow plows. Everything.
I mean.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I was thinking about that when they had this terrible attack in London, and this is the first one where this was a van, I think, yeah. where the person attacked the mosque, people coming out of the mosque, and the previous one on the bridge near Parliament, where the car drove up over the curve and people were injured and killed. That it's almost impossible to do anything about that. I know because you had the snow plows at the Women's yeah. March too to block off yeah. access to big numbers of people, but there's nothing you can do about.
No,
that.
It's tough, mind you. We try to do our best to police soft targets, but you know it's a tough one. I mean, you know, you can go down any street, and unfortunately, where people roam around safely, and not only here in the city but across this country. I mean, we have so many events where we have large crowds, but, you know, when it's a high profile event, you know, we just think because of the attention focused on that it becomes a more attractive target, and we try to lock it down better. And we've done that with the marathon.
Yeah.
We do it with Fenway Park. You know, I thought, you know, that was my idea to shut down Lansdowne Street on game days because
so
of
cars and trucks and vans can't yeah. get down the street.
I mean, it was hard enough before that without terrorists
yeah.
to get down that street, a car riding through people, that I always thought when I was up there that would be an attractive target. And we went, myself and Mayor Walsh sat down and asked them to do that. And they were great about it. And it was more, it wasn't for them to get the use out of Lansdowne Street. It was us to keep people safe.
Let's go to Mike, and we have a lot of people calling from outside of Boston, which
I
think is interesting. Mike in Marblehead. Hi, Mike.
Hey, thank you, Jared and Marjorie and Police Commissioner Evans. I want to ask about the Boston Marathon bombing. There was a book that came out from Michelle McPhee and also some statements from Boston Police Officer Sean Gannon that alleged that Tamerlan Tsarnaev was a FBI confidential informant. I'm wondering if you have any information on that? Have you looked into it? Are you aware of that?
No, I mean, I read Michelle McPhee's book, but, you know, again, you know, there's nothing to that we know about. You know, obviously, you know, that was prior to me being commissioner, but, you know, I know Officer Gannon. I don't know if we can believe him. You know, if Michelle McPhee got it from another source, but, you know, if he knows something, He didn't bring it to our attention. I know that.
Can we get a few more minutes with the commissioner, 8773? Well, I shouldn't give up the number because the phones are full, but you can try to email at bpr@wgbh.org. I have more people complaining we don't read their emails, but sometimes the emails are like three long paragraphs, and I can't read them on the air, so it helps if they're really, really short. That would be good. But meanwhile, here's something I'm kind of happy about, but I know most people aren't happy about it because they think it's going to result in more traffic accidents and stuff, but Boston Police Department issuing fewer traffic violations.
Oh, that's always we can't win. If we were issuing too many,
I'm with you.
Everybody would be all,
I'm fine.
Honestly, you know what? I got to be honest with you. We go after locations where there are multiple accidents. And I'm not a guy very much like arrest on hurting people. You know, I've always said to my officer, if you can give people a break when you pull them over and you can give them a warning and they know they messed up, they're going to like the Boston cop.
That's right. I like you better than the state troopers.
Well, honestly, if we write more tickets, then people get more surcharges. And the only one that makes out is the insurance companies.
Yeah.
And people, if we pull someone over and their only interaction with the Boston police is we gave them a $150 ticket on a violation, then they're going to leave saying, you know what, they're, you know, I won't use the term, but, you know, they're not nice guys.
Yeah.
You know, and so I'm always about building up community support. And yeah, most people, when they run the red light, it's traumatic enough to get pulled over and the cop saying, hey, you boo. But when we give people a break, they'll say, hey, those Boston police aren't bad guys. So I can honestly say I'm not a big pusher of giving citations for minor offenses if a warning can do the trick.
I guess I was always under the impression it was a revenue generator for either the state or the city.
Can I tell you something? We don't have quotas in the Boston police. And I can say that we don't. Our arrests continue to go down. Our citations continue to go down. I bet our tags go down, too, which, you know, obviously the mayor's probably not happy. But, but you know, he doesn't push us to do it. We don't use those. You know, we like to use them as a teachable moment. And if we can give someone a break, why not? You know what? I'm a city kid. Do I want my? Do you want to get a citation so you're paying the insurance company for the next 5 years?
I get a break from a Boston police officer. I wish I remember his name.
Right. But, you know,
I was driving my dog.
If we can make it a teachable moment without giving a fine, I'm all for it. You know, and then people will appreciate our job. And, you know, I like to say to my officers, we're ambassadors out there. We're out there to have positive interactions. And if someone knows that they messed up, the whole traumatic event of getting pulled over. But when we give them a pretty good deal, then, you know, I think it does more positive for us.
You're absolutely right.
Did you cry,
that.
Marjorie? Is that how you got out of it?
I did not cry. But after that arrest, it wasn't an arrest. He pulled me over. I have a little teeny tiny car seat for my little teeny tiny dog now because you can't drive with the dog in your lap. Let's squeeze in one more call before we go. Let's go to Chris in Sudbury. Hi, Chris.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. Commissioner, I was a little concerned with your comment earlier to the caller about illegal immigration that you seem to only be concerned with violent offenders. So I guess is drunk driving, like so if you were to pick up an illegal immigrant for drunk driving and you didn't turn them over to ICE and then a month later that same individual kills somebody, what would you tell their family?
Well, you know, something like that. You know, you're using a one case that, again, I said, doesn't, you know, there's a lot of good people who came here. We always have this one case that people use that should basically make sure every immigrant that ever came to is out. I understand there's those particular cases that are examples, but, you know, to me, we go after the violent people. And if they, you know, commit violent acts, then we're going to turn them over.
Commissioner, thank you very much, as always, for coming in. I like your tie, Commissioner.
Thank you.
Very colorful.
Yeah, and
pink with polka dots for the, can I just the say, listeners
yes.
who can't see.
It's very good without Jim here. You're doing a much better job than Jim.
You just got me fired. I hope you realize that.
Yeah. Jim is slithering around somewhere, Commissioner. We don't know exactly what he's doing, but we're pretty sure he's slithering. That's what he does when he's not here.
Thank you, Commissioner. Boston Police Commissioner Bill Evans joins us every month to take our questions and yours. Coming up, Elizabeth Bishop wrote that the art of losing is easy to master. What about the art of finding? A local violinist was recently reunited with her $40,000 violin. We're opening up the lines and asking you about your lost and found experiences. And if you've lost your public radio nerd mug, we can help. Stick around for that on 89.7 WGBH, Boston Public Radio.
Look. Okay, we just went an entire hour with no pledge interruptions. So here's what we're trying to do. We're trying to make it up. There is a match in effect, but only till 2 o'clock. Listen to this. For every dollar you give, the WGBH Member Match Fund will donate an additional dollar to WGBH, up to $10,000. It's our way of encouraging you to support us here, listening on the first day of the membership drive. So that means if you give $100, that will pay for $200 of your listening. A monthly sustaining gift of $10 a month pays for $240 of Boston Public Radio right now, but it only goes until 2 o'clock. So please take advantage of this, 888-897-9424 or WGBHnews.org.
And we have a new item for this campaign. That would be the Public Radio Nerd Mug for a gift of only $120 or $10 a month on the Sustainer plan. You can own it with pride. This is a brand new gift, as I mentioned. It features the 89.7 WGBH logo on one side and the words Public Radio Nerd on the other. So I guess you can hide it if you want. Just keep it face toward you. It's a black 12-ounce mug. Enjoy your favorite beverage and show you're a smart WGBH supporter at the same time. And you can get that for just $10 a month or give $120 all at once. Call 888-897-9424 or go to WGBHnews.org.
And once again, the match is only going until 2 o'clock. So this is a great time to give double the money for us. That would be really appreciated. 888-897-9424, WGBHnews.org. Okay, welcome back to Boston Public Radio. That is the sound of pure joy. That is the sound of violinist Amy Sims performing in front of the MBTA police headquarters. If you didn't see the story, Amy lost her $40,000 violin after leaving it in South Station. Can you imagine? Yeah. When the police returned it to her, tears came to her eyes. She said she had no idea how much that instrument meant to her until she lost it. And that was the sound of her playing, like I said, for the cops and everybody else who helped her at the MBTA, that is, police headquarters. So we're opening up the lines and asking you about lost and found experiences, from the sublime, like a family jewel, oh, God, people that have lost their wedding rings and engagement rings, to the ridiculous, like a missing sock, we can all relate to that, or the car keys you lose every day, or the glasses you lose every day, or the phone you lose constantly, only to rejoice every time you find them. Our number is 877-301-8970, 877-301-8970. What are your lost and found experiences? Are you someone who finds things or someone who loses things? And if you've worked at a lost and found, we want to hear from you as well. 877-301-8970. Have you ever lost anything like this?
I just lost one of my favorite pairs of sunglasses, and I wear sunglasses constantly. So,
You look so dashing in those Foster Grants.
I never leave them behind for that reason, and I did. It's the first time in my life I've left them behind, and I have no idea. I feel like I'm getting so much older now, and when I try to retrace my steps, I can only go back about the last 3 minutes. So I don't even have a sense of where I lost them.
Oh,
So they're out there somewhere.
You know, it's amazing really to me that this woman, it's not really clear how she got this back. There was some video involved and they saw some woman with a violin. It's not entirely clear how she got this back. But think about that, a $40,000 violin left behind in South Station and she was able to get it back. It's an incredible story.
And just think of her agony. We should explain she had been doing lots of traveling. She had just come back. I think she just come back from Chicago or someplace. It was weary. Yeah, she had gone on a work trip to Chicago. She was weary. She sat down at the Red Line and realized pretty quickly after that she left it behind, of course. And how could you possibly think you would get a $40,000 violin back? But thankfully, she did. Of course, she's in the long line of great players lost, like Yo-Yo.
What's Yo-Yo Ma? What's his story?
He left his prize, $2.5 million cello, in the back of a New York City taxi in 1999.
Wow. Did he get it back?
I believe he did get it back, thankfully.
You know, once my oldest daughter, you know how some babies are attached, newborns are attached to certain, stuffed animals or toys, whatever. My kid, my oldest kid had this thing about this bunny rabbit. It was this little gunned bunny rabbit. And she had a thing about the ear. She always had to, stroke the little rabbit's ear to suck her thumb or to go to sleep or to comfort herself or whatever. And one time we left it on the T. We left it on the green line coming home. And, it didn't matter that I bought her another gunned bunny rabbit. It looked almost exactly like it. It was just a bigger version. She was beside herself. It had to be this damn bunny. And I couldn't get her to nap. I couldn't get her to go to sleep. She was distraught. She was beside herself. And about 2 weeks later, it actually turned up in the MBTA Lost and Found. Yes, somebody turned it in. But I'll never forget it. I bought her, a bunny rabbit. My mother was still alive at the time, bought her something else. And forget it. It had to be this single bunny rabbit. But I don't know. So people have had pretty good luck, I guess, with the MBTA. You wouldn't think so with the MBTA Lost and Found, but they have. 877-301-8970. Your Lost and Found stories. We are ready for them. Allie from Duxbury, you are first on the Lost and Found segment here. Hi.
Hi, how are you?
Great.
I have to just tell you really quickly that my son is sitting next to me, and he has one of those things that you were just talking about, Marjorie.
Yeah.
Toy that he has to play with, the one little green thing on. And the second thing I wanted to tell you really quickly was that my father had a class ring that he wore. I think it was in the 1960s or 70s, and he was on Lake George, and he was on a boat and lost his class ring, and it washed ashore. It washed ashore, like, I think it was like 15 or 20 years later.
Oh,
that's incredible.
Wait a minute. It didn't sink to the bottom being a ring?
And
no?
It covered by
but
muck.
I guess it washed ashore at some point. I don't know. Wow. I don't know when, but my family has a house on Lake George, and it came back.
That's amazing. So what happened? Yeah, did someone call up and say, we found your class ring, or how did you get it?
I don't know. I don't remember the specifics of what happened, but it's kind of a crazy story that my family tells all the time.
That's a great one. That's a great one. That's like the new brides who lose their wedding ring down the garbage disposal. They take off their rings when they're washing the dishes, and then they go right down the garbage disposal and you have the plumbers coming over and opening up the whole thing, trying to get the rings out. Allie, thank you very much. That was a great one.
Let's go to Jessica calling from the car. Hi, Jessica.
Hi, how are you guys?
Great.
Good.
So I was going to tell a story. I was about 14, and my grandfather had actually passed away a few months prior to this. And I was at this concert. My mother had let me borrow my grandfather's jacket to bring it, and I lost it while we were there. And I was distraught trying to find it. And luckily, we spent a couple hours, me and my friends and my friend's mother, trying to find it. And luckily, one of the security guards had found it. And once I finally had had it back in my hands, that's when I finally cried about it. I remember how off. I mean, it was.
Yeah.
It was really tough.
Oh, that's a good one. That's a good one, Jessica. Thank you.
Yeah, it turns out it had been picked up by somebody else.
It's just amazing. Jessica, thank you for the call. How often people... I dropped my wallet once on Beacon Street, and somebody actually drove it to my house. I was so impressed.
Actually, this isn't a lost story. My car was broken into, and all of my stuff was spread all over Boston Common, which is awful. But somebody went and collected because the thieves only wanted some of the things in my bag, like the important things, money and checkbook and whatnot, but they were able to find some other piece that identified me, and they called me up, and they had it all neatly packaged for me, and I just thought that was so generous.
Yeah, you hear those stories all the time of people. Now, there's always a great story, though, of somebody, and it was a while ago, where somebody that was down on their luck, in kind of desperate straits, found money in a backpack, and this person was broke, and they brought the money to the police station. I mean, you know, it was thousands of dollars. That's an amazing story.
There are a lot of good people. We talk constantly about the terrible stuff in the world, but there are a lot of great people in the world.
Now, think about that, Jared. You find a backpack, no name. You open it up, and there's $50,000 inside.
I couldn't. I honestly can say this. I couldn't live with myself. I would feel so guilty.
Maybe you'd say, I want to take $1,000 for my reward before I turn it into
sure.
the
there
police
was only,
department.
There was only 40 when I found it.
Exactly. That's right.
But I think I saw Marjorie Egan running away from it right before I got there.
Or, I mean, imagine if you did find the $50,000 and then you turned it in as an honest person and you got no reward.
Yeah, then you want to go take it back.
Then you want to go take it back.
Or you want to go on Oprah and have everybody across the country send money to you.
Reward for $50,000. Do you give them a 5%, 10%, 20% tip?
Yeah, I think you need to get at least $1,000.
I think so. I think you should give them $2,500, maybe $5,000.
And then there are the people where you say, yeah, isn't that funny? Sometimes you read those stories and then you find out, well, they gave them a $100 gift card to Target or something. Not enough.
877-301-8970. We're talking about your lost and found stories. Let's go to Beth on the car. Hi, Beth.
Hi. I wish I had a good resolution like yours, Marjorie, in terms of the bunny. But my son just lost on the New York City subway last weekend. He stuffed a couple bow ties in his pocket that belonged to his half-brother. One was given to his half-brother by a very famous movie star, and it was a Tom Ford bow tie and was livid at his brother, and he made him go out and buy a new one, which was $400, which of course we paid for.
Oh, wait a minute. Who is the very famous movie star, Beth?
I can't divulge.
Of course you can.
All we know is you're Beth in the car.
We won't
you
tell anyone.
You could be anybody. Come on.
No, he'd kill me if he heard this.
Okay. All right.
We have 2 minutes left. We can just guess all of the movie stars until the
Tom Cruise.
All right. How about H. Jackman?
Hugh Jackman. Oh my God, that's
and
great.
He's a very dapper man, in a tuxedo.
He is a very dapper
man.
Yeah.
So I was pretty upset.
Oh, Beth,
but
I'm sorry.
At any rate, I said you can't stuff things in your pocket when you're on the New York City subway. You put them in a bag, and you know somebody's walking around with a nice bow tie.
Beth, thank you very much for the call. You know what I used to do with jewelry that when I was young, like I got my grandmother's engagement ring and stuff. I would wrap them in Kleenex and put them in pockets of coats because I was afraid of being robbed, you know, because our house had been broken into a few times. And, of course, what do you think happens?
Somebody stole the coat?
No, nobody stole the coat. I couldn't remember which pocket of which coat it was in. And then I just probably used it as a Kleenex. I mean, I lost a lot of, gifts that my parents had given me that way by stuffing them in Kleenex and then throwing them out.
You would think you'd learn after the first time.
I know. I kept doing it. My mother would hide money in books and then, of course, cash in books. Have you ever done that?
No, but my grandmother did the same thing. And then after she died, we were going through her house. And then I think I was the first to find where she had tucked money. And then everybody was going through everything because she had money everywhere in cassette tapes and books and mattresses. It was hilarious.
It makes it a little difficult if you're trying to use the money for special occasion. You remember you put it in a book, but you've got 500 books in your house. And then what the hell do you do?
Suddenly the whole Bowen family was very literate.
Exactly.
We're talking about your lost and found experiences from the sublime to the ridiculous. The conversation continues on 89.7 WGBH Boston Public Radio.
Hi, it's Jim Browdy. They say that 90% of life is just showing up, or maybe it's 80%. Whatever it is, it's a big percent. Look, the point is, even though I didn't show up for work today, it's a great time for you to show up and shore up support for Boston Public Radio. Make that call or make that online gift. But whatever you do, do it now before the weekend shows up. Here's Marjorie and Jared to tell you more. 45.
Hi there. There's just a few minutes left to get your gift matched dollar for dollar. So call now, 1-888-897-9424. And the member match fund will donate a dollar to the station for every dollar you give, up to $10,000, which is huge. Again, call 888-897-9424 or just go directly to WGBHnews.org. It's the member support is their way of encouraging you to support WGBH right now. When you give $100, that will pay for $200 of your listening. $500, of course, pays $1,000. Right now, there are just 45 minutes left of this match. So call 888-897-9424 or go to WGBHnews.org.
Yeah, as Jared said, this only goes on until 2 o'clock, and that means that you either love us or you don't love us. If you call before 2 o'clock, you love us.
This?
If you don't call before 2 o'clock, you just don't care. You just don't care. So anyway, 888-897 is the number, 9424, WGBHnews.org. As Jared said, if you do this before 2 o'clock, if you give $10, it gets $20, $100, $200, right on up to $10,000. And it really is, you know, a very big bang for your buck. So please take advantage. You've got the Public Nerd Radio mug going on right now, 888-897-9424, WGBHnews.org.
So this is the difference between Marjorie and I having a good ride home or a bad ride home. Do you love us?
Exactly.
Or do you not love
exactly.
us?
Exactly. You just don't care. You just don't care. How will we feel then?
Just cry, sobbing all the
exactly.
way home. I will be anyway. Remember, you can do the sustaining membership. That's a monthly giving plan. You can make easy monthly gifts to keep the programs you love, including Boston Public Radio, on the air month after month, year after year. Call 888-897-9424. It's an easy way to give. Just pick any amount that you'd like each month on your credit card. Just $5 or even $10 a month is all it takes, but you can give more by calling 1-888-897-9424.
Now, there are at least three people who do love us, Jared. Here they are. Joanne in Scituate, Mary in Stoneham, Susan in Nahant. Thank you very much for taking the time to call. I always say this, but it's so true. Nobody likes these pledge breaks, but the thing is, if we didn't have these pledge breaks, we would have these endless commercials that go
That's
on for
true.
Five,
That's
six,
true.
And 7 minutes. Free radio here at WGBH, and you can double the amount of money you give if you give before 2 o'clock. The number is 888-897-9424, WGBHnews.org. And if you don't give, we just won't have a job.
That's right.
What it comes down to.
That's
so
right.
Think about that. I mean, I you're tuning in now. I think that means you like us a little bit. Show us some love. 888-897-9424, WGBHnews.org. If you're just tuning in, we're talking about the musician who lost her $40,000 violin at South Station, only to be reunited with it days later. We're using this as an opportunity to ask you about your lost and found experiences. Our number is 877-301-8970. Our email is bpr@wgbh.org. Okay, let's go to Gary in Kingston. Hi, Gary.
Hi, good afternoon.
Thanks for calling.
I wanted to let you know I'm a custodian at a middle school, 7th and 8th grade.
Oh, you
and
must have a perspective.
Every year, the first week through the very last day of the year, kids walk away from shoes, jackets, gloves, shirts, you name it, they've left it. And so we always have a lost and found area. And one time, just before Christmas, I had a husband come in, and he said that his son had left a North Face. Yeah, North Face. And he said he's lost this really expensive jacket. And I said, you know what? I think I know where it is. So him and I walked in and found a pile, and I finally found it for him. And he said, I just bought this for him, and it's $300 or whatever. He said, and I can't believe that he's left it. So I said, I got an idea. I said, why don't you take it home and wrap it up as a gift and give it to him and say, this is the last jacket I'm ever going to get you. And he did. And he came back after Christmas and says, my son just couldn't believe that I bought him another one of those jackets.
Oh, that's great. You know, you do wonder, what you know, when they come in from recess without their coat, don't they notice that something is missing? But I guess they don't, Gary, right? Because you see playgrounds
and
schools strewn with clothes. It's kind of a weird thing. Gary, thank you. Thank you very much for the call. Here's a good email. This is from Donna. She says, my purse rode the red line all by itself from Park Street to Harvard Square, back when that was the end of the line. And the MBTA people there called the Harvard Square staff, and they rescued it.
Oh, see, there are lots of restoring faith in humanity stories, like M. Farrington, who just wrote us, and she says her husband has a wallet guardian angel. He has lost his wallet, she says, 10 times over the last 30 years, and every single time he got it back intact.
Wow, that's pretty good.
I need a sunglasses Leslie, guardian angel.
Yeah, I know. Leslie from East Salem, what'd you lose?
Hi. When I was a kid in the 60s, we were headed on a family vacation, five kids, my parents and the family cat in the station wagon. And we stopped at Howard Johnson's on the Jersey Turnpike, and the cat got lost. And we spent a lot of time looking and then had to leave, spent a month in North Carolina. And when we were coming back, my parents stopped at the Hojo's on the other side of the Jersey Turnpike. And my mother crossed the Jersey Turnpike, got picked up by a state police guy who took her to the Hojo's, and the cat was there.
Oh.
They had a litter of kittens, and they were feeding her and made a little place for her outside the Howard Johnson.
Oh.
And she went on to live to be 19 years old.
That's a great story. So the cat just stayed right where it was lost.
She stayed, and the restaurant let her stay. You know, big corporate restaurant, and they fed her, and she had her babies, and they took care of her babies.
There you go.
And
that's why we love Howard Johnson's back in the day. Leslie, that's a wonderful call. Losing an animal, that's devastating. When you see those photographs on posters people put up that can't find their dog,
I know,
and they've lost.
Terrible.
And you always think that with all the coyotes roaming around, even in the city, that you know, they're probably not coming back, you know?
Well, there was that crazy story. Remember a couple of weeks ago, the cat that was found by the Zakim Bridge that had leapt out of the car and it survived. So that gives you faith in animals, too, because they are survivors.
And sometimes they walk back home.
That happened to me once. When I was a kid, we moved, but only about a mile away from where we had been because my parents had built a house, and our dog disappeared, our little black lab. She was beautiful. She disappeared, and I was on my paper route. See, I've always been a newsman, and I was riding around, and I looked at my old house, and I thought, God, did they get a dog that looks exactly like ours? But it wasn't. Our dog had walked all that way because she thought she was going home.
Oh, yeah. My God.
Isn't that incredible?
Oh, my God.
So I got her, Sammy, and we went back to our new home, and she never did it again.
That's a good one. That's a good one. Paula Newton, what's your story?
I lost my wallet, and I was looking around for it, and I called the police station in Newton, and they said, yes, we have it. And I went down there, and they said a little boy, he was probably about 8 years old, had come in, and he was so excited that he got to bring a wallet into the police station. And so I asked if I could get his address, and I sent him $20 in the mail and said thank you for always doing the right thing. But I just thought it was so sweet that they said you should have seen the look on his face when he got to do this. So his parents are doing something right.
Yeah,
so
that's pretty good. That's pretty good. You got him young before he got jaundiced and greedy and had to debate like Jared and I did. How much would you return to the $50,000? Paula, thank you for the call.
Yeah, but in that case, because he was just a kid, you could have given him some Reese's peanut butter cups and he would have been fine. No money exchange necessary.
Alana from Cape Cod, what's your deal? Hi.
Oh, I used to own a Toyota Camry. Those cars were easily stolen. So,
yeah.
Twice it was stolen, and it came back to me damaged, and I got it repaired, and all was good. This was over a period of years. The third time it was stolen, I didn't get it back. You know, when weeks on end with a rental car, finally the insurance company settled and I bought a new car. I was going to work one day and I normally parked in a certain stall at work, and the stall was occupied by a blue Toyota Camry. And I thought, oh, that's where I used to park my Camry before. I can't park there now, darn. And then I walked up to that car and I saw it had the same burn hole on the back seat and it had a scratch on the front that I recognized. And lo and behold, I left a note on it. Lo and behold, it was my old car. And it had been recovered, and it was sold at auction, and a girl bought it. Her brother repaired it, and she was parking it in my old stall.
Oh, that's a great one. That's a great one.
But wait a minute. But I guess you couldn't. Could you reclaim it at that point?
No, I was already settled out and had a new car. I mean, the insurance had covered my loss, so...
Wow.
It went on to a new life, but it was like it had a homing device, kind of like the cats and dogs, and it went back to where it normally used to reside.
Alana, thank you. That's a great call. That's a great call. And this is a great email to wrap this up with. This is from Anne Marie. She said, before my very frugal working class dad died, he pulled me aside and said, those pillows in the den, make sure you don't throw them away. Now, these pillows were really disgusting, ratty things. But when my sister and I felt them, we heard a crunch. Inside, $40,000. My father, who lived like a pauper, saved it for us rather than spend it on himself. If you met him, you wouldn't have known. He had this large heart inside his very gruff exterior. That's pretty good, isn't it?
That is beautiful.
Yeah,
that's
actually
a great story.
Actually, I'm wrong. We can keep going with this one for a little while. We're talking about people's lost and found stories. 877-301-8970.
Well, here's one from somebody we know, actually. Remember Anne Mostu, a reporter here at WGBH?
Yes.
Recently engaged, by the way. Her mother just wrote in and said that her daughter, Anne, found a diamond-encrusted Rolex watch at Logan Airport. She turned it in and was later reunited. It was reunited with its owner, an elderly lady. It was essentially the last gift her husband had given her, and she rewarded Anne with a large check and a lovely note. And I happen to know that Anne Mostu likes fine things.
Okay,
so
now
it's
hold on. Hold
very
on.
Nice that she turned it over.
Patricia, don't tell us a large check. Tell us how much. We want to know. Okay, a diamond-encrusted Rolex. That's got to be worth, what, $6,000, $7,000?
I would venture to say
maybe
more
$10,000?
That. Yeah, that's right, Patricia. If we could get that woman to tell us the
like
movie
know,
star,
yeah,
then you can tell us the amount.
We'd like to know the exact amount. I want to know what Anne Mostu got. But that's another tough one. Can you imagine if you found a Rolex watch, which are several thousand dollars? You know, you would feel like a terrible person if you kept it. On the other hand, you would have this absolutely gorgeous you would not do. You could get rid of the $20 Timex.
And how would you answer that, Marjorie? That you would suddenly
have to,
come to work with
well,
a
you know,
Jim would never let that go.
You have to turn it away because those things eat away at you.
Yes.
You know, you always think, I mean, you have nightmares about the terrible thing that you did. Okay, Jackson calling from Sharon. What's up with you, Jackson?
Hi.
Hi.
So when I was about 4 or 5, my family took a trip to Disney World. And, of course, I brought my favorite stuffed animal.
Of course.
Who was named Lucy, after my aunt's dog.
Oh.
But, and so I took her on the monorail and all that, and on the rides. But I left Lucy in Disney World at the hotel. And so when we got home, we realized that I had left my favorite stuffed animal, who was, like, my favorite thing ever. In Disney World, and I cried, for hours. So,
did you get it back?
So my parents made a lot of calls to Disney World to see, and they told me that I was probably never, ever going to see Lucy again, because I probably wasn't. But they did tell me that Lucy was going to be riding the monorail forever. But eventually, Lucy came back to us in a box.
Oh.
And it was probably the happiest day of my life.
Really? So somebody turned it in, and the people at Disney World mailed it back to you? That's
well,
pretty neat.
Unlike Jackson, I have a cell phone that is still sitting at the base of Space Mountain that did not come back to me. That went flying out of my pocket when I was there about 10 years ago.
Really?
Yep.
I lost my cat, too. Our cat ran out of the door of the car when I was little.
Oh, how does that just happen?
We opened the door, and he ran out. My parents said, get back in the car, we're leaving.
Ouch.
I know. It was terrible. We had several cats, so you know, you lose one, you have a couple more still
oh
in the car.
Goodness.
I know. It was absolutely terrible. Absolutely.
I'm going to start searching the Howard Johnsons for your cat, Marjorie Egan. All right, coming up, our big box stores crushing the local wine and spirits shops. Jonathan Alsop, founder of the Boston Wine School, joins us for that and more. He's next on 89.7 WGBH Boston Public Radio.
Hi, it's Jim Browdy. I'm not on the show today, but I am asking you to support Boston Public Radio anyway. If anything, the stories we've talked about this year prove the importance of independent journalism and analysis from sources you can trust. That's what you get here every day, and it only happens with your support. Marjorie, tell them what to do.
Thank you, Jim. And I'm telling them what to do because you're not here to tell everyone what to do. But that's okay. Anyway, until 2 o'clock, we have this two-for-one match. That means if you give $10, it turns into $20. You give a lot of money if you can swing that. Imagine if you could give $5,000. Well, it will turn into $10,000. And that is from the WGBH. It's a match deal, and people are willing to match those donations. The number is 888-897-9424, WGBHnews.org. It is only till 2 o'clock, so this is a direct reflection on what you think of Boston Public Radio, and I think we're doing a fine job here, Jared. I think we're doing a very fine job. This is a support to us. If you can do it before 2 o'clock, it would really mean a lot. Your individual contribution joins with others, helps pay for it, not just us, in all seriousness, but all the news and all the entertainment programs you love here 24 hours a day, 7 days a week here at WGBH. Again, the match is only till 2 o'clock. That's 29 minutes left. 888-897-9424, WGBHnews.org.
It benefits the arts coverage that I get to do here at WGBH.
Exactly.
We do more consistently than just about any other broadcast outlet in New England. I don't mean to say that as a boast, but just that we're able to be covering the arts, which are so important, especially in this time.
You have a great show every Friday night at 8:30, and you are unique, because nobody's getting the interviews and getting the sit-downs with people that you do.
Thank you, Marjorie Egan.
You're welcome.
So just call 888-897-9424. Also, we have a new item for you in this public radio campaign, which is the Public Radio Nerd Mug, which I'm holding right here. It's very chic. It's black with this big, bold white lettering, so you can proclaim your nerdness for a gift of $120 or $10 a month on the Sustainer plan. And it features the excuse me, I'm getting all choked up about the Public Nerd Mug. It features the WGBH 89.7 logo on the other side. Just call 888-897-9424. Again, you can get it for just $10 a month or give $120 all at once. 888-897-9424 or go to WGBHnews.org.
So I want to tell you again, this is only going on until 2 o'clock. This is a two-for-one deal. $120 turns into $240. $300 turns into $600. And if you can swing it and you can give us big dollars, $1,000. I mean, it just doubles. It's a fantastic deal, and it only goes until 2 o'clock. The number is 888-897-9424, WGBHnews.org. And if we were not here during these pledge breaks asking you for money, you would be subjected to horrible commercials. If Jim were here, I'd kid him about his virility pills he used to be selling at a previous radio job he had. And I was selling things, mattresses. That was my big thing at the job I was at. You'd be listening to that ad nauseum because you are generous with your money. Whether you got a little bit or a lot, it means you don't have any commercials to listen to. And this double match is only till 2 o'clock, 888-897-9424, WGBHnews.org.
Jonathan Alsop just walked in. I know what I'm filling my public radio nerd mug with. He's bearing great wine. You can fill yours with wine, too. Nobody will judge. 888-897-9424. And just remember, there are only about 28 minutes left to this match, which is a huge opportunity to give at WGBH.
I want to thank Lee in Tiverton, Rhode Island, Joan in Reading, Faith in Lexington, Mary in Westport, Jason in Milford, New Hampshire. It really means a lot to us, and I'm serious. We love to go out and we meet our listeners at some kind of the Boston Public Library. It means a lot to us that you will take the time to listen to us, and it means an extra lot that you will take the time to donate to what you hear here at WGBH. Again, the match is only till 2 o'clock, 888-897-9424, WGBHnews.org. Okay, welcome back to Boston Public Radio. Jim Browdy is on vacation. Jared Bowen is filling in. And if you are just tuning in, we are going to be joined, well, we are joined right now here in Studio 3 by Jonathan Alsop. He's going to get us uncorked. It's the ultimate.
We need it.
He's the ultimate.
I left something in the car. I'll be right back.
Ultimate bon vivant, Jonathan Alsop. That's what we call him, the ultimate bon vivant. He's well known as an ultimate bon vivant all around Boston. But he's also the founder of the Boston Wine School. He's going to tell us a lot about what's going on in the wine business. And he also is going to get us actually unscrewed because you have a screw top instead of a bottle top. Thank you very much for coming in.
Well, thank you. Thank you for having me.
So, Jonathan, let's start with some dramatic changes in how people are selling wine.
Yes.
I knew about Costco, but there's much more on the horizon than Costco with their big, huge wine department.
Yes. Well, at its core, what's happening and what's turned the wine world, especially the retail wine world and the importers and distributors, too, into such turmoil is essentially the arrival of big box wine. Just like 100 years ago, you used to have, you know, a little hardware store in every neighborhood. Now we have, you know, now we have a Home Depot and Walmart. Well, you know, cast your mind back to that time when these things started to emerge and all of those little hardware stores and small businesses got wiped out by the emergence of big box hardware and home goods. It's exactly the same thing, except now with wine.
So are they able to curate on that little level? I mean, there is a reason you go into your local wine shop and you have your person you talk to because they have those wines that you feel like you're being very distinctive when you bring them home to a great dinner or you bring them to a dinner party. Does this mean that these big stores are able to do the same thing now?
Well, the big stores, of course, are not. They're about being one penny less expensive than the next most expensive person. I mean, it's all... You know, it's all steeply, sometimes just normally discounted. You know, Total Wines, which is the entity really that we're talking about, although there are many, many more of them. I mean, people have not really necessarily heard of Total Wines yet, but, you know, it's the Home Depot of wines, and it's coming. And there are others behind it coming, too. The question is, how do you react to it? As a small wine shop, do you say, thank you, Total Wines. You're selling the cheap, low profit, high volume. You know that's where you get your Yellowtail. That's where you get your Kendall Jackson. Thank you for taking that off my shoulders. Now I will sell what? You know, how will I mean, no one knows the answer to this yet, but this is what everyone's asking themselves. Once that goes away, because even if you want to keep the part of the market, even if you want to keep it, you're not going to be able to because it's going to be a dollar less at Total Wines. So that's going away for you. How do you react to that?
And, well, I never heard of this German grocer, this Lidl. Mm-hmm. How do you pronounce this?
Lidl.
Lidl, okay. They're going to be selling not only $2.89 bottles of wine. I can't imagine what you're getting there, but like 89-cent pineapples and 39-cent butter croissants.
Yes.
This is a big deal for everybody. Yeah.
Well, so my mom lives in South Carolina, and I can't wait to visit it next time I'm down there. When I read this article, it was sort of pitching steep discount plus German charm.
I guess,
and I'm not really sure how that's going to. It's got to be because of the discount. It's not going to be the charm.
Yeah,
you know. But again, it's the same thing. Imagine, you know. Again, it's the in this case, it's the big boxification of now a market. You know, not a supermarket, but now. You know, this a market. So
yeah, where's Amazon? I'm surprised Amazon, which just took over Whole Foods, hasn't taken over.
Now we're not talking big box. Now we're talking big drone.
We're talking big drone.
That's right in line behind this. You know, once you got big box and once you've got Amazon as part of that mix, and the challenge is that law does not allow this. And so
anywhere?
In Massachusetts and darn few other places.
Yeah.
But so what Total Wine is saying is, hey, free trade, free the grapes. And on the one hand, we're all saying, yeah, free the grapes. You know, we're fantastic. Why can't I order wine from a wine shop in Rhode Island and have it delivered to Boston? Why can't I do that? And no one knows the answer. It's just the way it's been for a long time. So we're all saying, yay. Yay, Total Wines, free the grapes. People are like, you're going to free the grapes and then slay everyone with it. So,
yeah.
So the good side is that what they're talking about is deregulation, which we all want very, very badly. But once it's deregulated, they're just going to kill everybody.
Yeah.
Yeah, it is kind of sad in a way, although there'll still be the people, probably a minority of people, who will do the little quaint wine store visit because they like the personal service and stuff.
Is this not an opportunity now? Is there not someone out there who said, hey, I always wanted to have a wine shop, but I didn't want to sell nips and lottery tickets and Diet Coke. I wanted to do something different with the wine shop concept.
Yeah.
You know, the opportunity side and the hopeful side is this is a chance to reinvent yourself you know, and hopefully into a better version.
But you have to go to wealthy towns because people are not going to be spending $30 for a bottle of wine.
And can people invest that much in their business? I mean, some package stores are like, you know, I'm not going to get up. So if it goes away, I guess it goes away. I mean, that's what a lot of hardware stores did. You know, bury their head in the sand. Is that an option?
All right, we're talking with Jonathan Alsop, founder of the Boston Wine School. The conversation continues next on 89.7 WGBH Boston Public Radio.
Support for WGBH comes from you and Tanglewood, presenting Something Wonderful, celebrating the music of Rodgers and Hammerstein, Sunday afternoon, June 25th at 2:30. Tickets and more information at tanglewood.org. And A24, presenting The Exception, a World War II espionage thriller about a soldier who must make the choice between obeying his duty and following his heart, starring Christopher Plummer as Kaiser Wilhelm II. Now playing.
Bon appetit!
Zesty local flavor with piping hot takes on the day's issues, served up with sparkling conversation and a side order of whatever Jim picked up at Whole Foods. It's Boston Public Radio on 89.7 WGBH, served up fresh every day thanks to your support. Call 888-897-9424 or pitch in online at wgbhnews.org.
Okay, we have a match, a two-for-one match that's going on only until 2 o'clock. That means 18 more minutes, and we'd really appreciate it if you could take some time to support us right now, because whatever you give will be doubled. You give $100, it's $200. You give $10, it's $20. And if you can afford more, this is up to $10,000. So if you have ample funds and you could give us $5,000, and that would be doubled to $10,000. That would be absolutely fantastic. We would really appreciate it. We only have until 2 o'clock. The number is 888-897-9424, wgbhnews.org.
And you can just lie about it, right? If you give us
absolutely
$500, you can tell all your friends you just gave $1,000.
Well,
because
you did.
Essentially, that's what happened.
Did. Yeah, exactly.
So, why not? Why do 500? Just start at 1,000 and tell everybody you gave 2,000.
Oh, why not 3?
That's wonderful. Just call 1-888-897-9424. We're also gifting the Public Radio Nerd mug right now for $120 or $10 a month on the Sustainer plan. It features the 89.7 WGBH logo on one side, and it features the words Public Radio Nerd on the other, so you can own your nerddom. Call 1-888-897-9424 or go to wgbhnews.org. And remember the match that we've been talking about? There are only 17 minutes left just till the end of Boston Public Radio.
That's right. And that is a big deal, to be able to double the money. And again, it's almost quarter of two, so this is only for 16 or 17 more minutes. 888-897-9424, wgbhnews.org. It does really mean a lot. I'm making jokes and trying to be entertaining here, but it does really mean a lot to us that you take the time to listen to us and then you take the time to donate. I used to donate when I was planning my whole day, driving around, listening to certain shows on National Public Radio that I really loved, and I hope some of you feel that way about National Public Radio now. And it's an opportunity to give a little bit toward what you listen to. And if you give in the next 16 minutes, you can double the money. 888-897-9424, wgbhnews.org.
We have some special thanks to Patricia in Linfield, to Kimberly in Plymouth, Pamela in Jamaica Plain, and Ruben in Hudson. You can add your name to that list of great donors, and including those who are participating in the match right now. And again, the more you can give, this is the moment. This is the time, with just 16 minutes left, where whatever you give gets doubled. So call 1-888-897-9424.
There's another important point to make. It's Jared and I today. You know, I mean, Jim muscles me out of the promotions. You know, he's always talking more than I am and that kind of stuff. Well, we have to show that we can do as well when it's Jim and I as it is with Jared and I. So the pressure's on. The pressure is on. I can't be a failure here. And I need you to help me succeed and to help Jared succeed. So please think about it that way. Jim's not here. We have to be up to snuff on the pledge things. We get graded. You know, I don't want to get a D+. I don't want to fail. I want to do really well. So think about that. 15 minutes to double the money. 888 877-947-9424, WGBHnews.org. All the people that email me all the time saying, Jim Browdy talks too much, here's your opportunity to put your money where your mouth is. You complain that he interrupts. Here's your opportunity to put your money where your mouth is, because he's going to be back pretty soon. So we only have 15 minutes. 888-897-9424.
Great. So now I have to measure my worth against Jim Browdy.
That's right. Exactly. Show Jared Bowen that he can fill the shoes. Now, actually, Jim's shoes are very big, but that he can do his best to fill Jim's shoes. Again, 888-897-9424 or WGBHnews.org. And thanks. Welcome back to Boston Public Radio. I was so carried away, I forgot to welcome everybody back to Boston Public Radio. Jonathan Alsop is here. He joins us regularly. He is our wine guru. Okay, we were just talking about these big box store wines, you know, that were going to be added to BJ's and Wegmans and Total Wines and all that kind of stuff. At the same time, people are buying wines at these big box stores. Beer sales are apparently sliding, and I'm surprised by this because we just had a craft beer guy in here last week. Well, two of them actually, from Aeronaut. It's right opening a place right near a beer garden, and the craft beer seems to be everywhere. But so, is all beer going down, or just like the Bud Light going down, or what's going on?
Hey, how about we taste some wine?
Oh, absolutely.
Talk about
how
beer?
About that? Because I'm in a self-worth crisis right now. So
that's right.
I think that will
that's
help.
Right. You and me both. If we don't raise any money, you know, we're hanging by a thread
we're
here.
Finish that
clinging
bottle.
Clinging to a slippery pole.
Why so competitive?
I am very competitive. That's right.
Yeah. So in terms of the numbers, you know, planet-wide alcohol consumption is down. This is there's a lot of different ideas about why this is happening. I mean, I think this is just kind of an anomalous moment. Alcohol consumption in Western countries, where it was at its highest, is falling.
Really?
And it's increasing in the rest of the world. We're at a time now where, you know, the West accounts for more of the planet's alcohol consumption. So I think it's just an anomaly that it's going down because the rest of the world is, especially China and Asia in general, is increasing. And I think that, you know, this is a little, one theory and that makes sense to me is that this is a little dip before it continues its relentless upward climb.
Huh.
The other thing about beer being so far down, a lot of so consumption down over just previous years at any rate, is this idea that, you know, guys like, you know, the Aeronaut guys and craft brewers and craft beer artists,
yeah,
you know, were really doing some amazing, awesome stuff. And, you know, then the big beer producers noticed it and began to shamelessly co-opt, debase, demean, and degrade them.
What do you mean?
Well, just, you know, like Budweiser has a craft beer. I mean, it's, you know, it's not a craft beer, but it's a craft style beer. So they've gotten into the market and kind of tainted it with their presence. So it's kind of stumbling now. You know, people are not, you know, it hasn't continued. The craft beers are getting better and better and more and more and more and more interesting and more compelling. But they've been undercut by... You ever hear the story about the guy who had this goose that laid golden eggs?
Yeah.
It's like that. You know, it's here are craft beers happening, and then in comes Budweiser, in comes, you know, these shameless multinational corporations that are passing off industrial beer as craft beer. And that's undercut the market a little bit right now.
But you can obviously taste the difference, though, right?
I think you can.
Yeah.
But, you know, I think it's undercut it because now people are tasting these, you know, big industrial craft, in quotes, brews. And they're like, this is not that awesome. Well, it's not that awesome. It's not really a craft beer. You know, it's.
To me, it's night and day.
Yeah.
And I'm not exactly a connoisseur.
But it's knocking down there's already people who are like, craft beers, come on, give me a Miller High Life. You know, people are already saying that. And then when they taste like a degraded craft beer, which is a craft beer brand on it, it reinforces that idea and kind of cuts it.
Well, I have two things to say. Actually, three. First of all, what are we drinking? Because this is fantastic.
It is fantastic.
But before I forget, yes. We were talking about the Rolex that was found, and we were trying to get from the woman who wrote in about our colleague how much she was paid. She was given a check for $150 for turning in that Rolex. So that's the update there.
Wait a minute. That's terrible.
It's terrible.
Well, that's not bad.
A diamond-encrusted Rolex, and you got $150
bucks? I don't think that's that bad.
Another way of
$500. Should have given her $500.
Another way of saying this is, it really is the thought that counts.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Okay.
Because it's clearly not the money.
Okay.
Okay, so what we're tasting here is a Spanish white wine from, the grape is Verdejo, which means in Spanish greenish. It's from a part of Spain called Rueda, which if you look at a map, it's like an island of white wine surrounded by this sea of red wine. You know, Spain is kind of a lot of white wine from Spain, but it is overwhelmingly red. And it's a winery called Las Brisas, and that means in English exactly breezes. It means exactly what it sounds like in Spanish.
It is a pretty bottle, isn't it?
White wine from red wine country. So a good white wine for red wine people who don't like white wine yet.
Okay.
You know, so this is where we would take those people to try and get them started.
So I wanted to ask you about the blending wine. That's becoming a big deal where people mix Chianti and Bordeaux and all that kind of stuff. We've talked about this before, but it's really growing ever faster. Mm.
Yeah. The blending thing has become sort of a trend, especially in California. Like the hottest wine in California now is a Napa blended white from a winery called Mathiasen, a blended white wine. So yeah, it's becoming a trend. It's something people have been doing for thousands of years. We'll keep doing it. It's not sick to love blended wine. It's okay.
Okay. Feel better about that. Jonathan Alsop joins us regularly. He's the founder of the Boston Wine School. Thank you so much for joining us. And thank you for listening to another edition of Boston Public Radio. Tune in tomorrow for writer Sherman Alexie. He has a new book out, and he'll be with us at the Boston Public Library, so please drop by to see him. Our crew is Chelsea Murs, Amanda McGowan, Tori Bedford, Jason Tureski, Molly Boygon, Christina Biene. Our engineer is John Leclerc Parker. We're a production of WGBH. I am Jared Bowen.
I am Marjorie Egan, and I would like to point out that the 2-for-1 deal is over in about 7 minutes. So if you want to make Jared and I feel good, or Jared and me feel good, and that we can do what we can do without Jim Browdy, please, the 2-for-1 deal, only a few more minutes, 888-897.
I'll be shattered. I'll be shattered if we lose.
I'll be shattered if we lose. I mean, our necks are on the line, so think about that. I am Marjorie Egan. Thank you very much for tuning in, and do what you can before 2 o'clock. Thanks for listening. Bye.
It's time to support Boston Public Radio on WGBH. Listener contributions pay for the program and keep it on the air. You don't have to give much to make a difference. Please make a difference by calling 888-897-9424 or give online at wgbhnews.org.
APR Today was made possible by our listener contributors. That's how WGBH works. The money you give keeps at BPR right here on the radio. Call 888-897-9424 or give online at wgbhnews.org. I'm Jack Callahan along with Andy Hicks.
And the good news is there is, in fact, a dollar-for-dollar match on for the next 7 minutes, up to $10,000. But the bad news is it's just for the next 7 minutes, so get those calls in now. That means when you give $60, it becomes $120. $120 becomes $240. You've heard the drill. You know what to do. But if you haven't called, this is a great time to do it. 888-897-9424. You can always do your part, too, online, very simply by clicking that button at wgbhnews.org.
Right. We also have a thank you gift today. When you offer $10 a month as a sustaining member at WGBH, we'll send you the NPR WGBH Radio Public Radio Nerd Mug. It's black. It's 11 ounces and has the WGBH logo on one side, but the large letters also get us a Public Radio Nerd. Get your nerd on and get the word out. Support WGBH at just $10 a month. You can go to wgbhnews.org, and you can even see an image of it there, or give us a call at 888-897-9424.
Listener support is important to WGBH and Boston Public Radio because it makes the programs you hear accountable to you. Not anybody else, not the advertisers, for there are none. Not the sponsors, for we have a few underwriters and they're fantastic. But you know what? 70% of our income comes directly from individual support. That's where you come in. That's how Jim and Marjorie get to have long conversations, in-depth conversations, and fascinating conversations with some of the biggest newsmakers in the world and around the region. 888-897-9424. That's how they stay free and available to you each and every day with your support, also at WGBHnews.org.
Mike in Boylston is addicted to Jim and Marjorie. He took action, made an online contribution, and you know what? His contribution is matched. Yes, the dollar-for-dollar match is still in effect. Now, this is being offered by other generous WGBH supporters, so that means when you give $60, it becomes $120 worth of BPR. $120 becomes $240. Shortly put, simply put, your gift right now will go twice as far, but only for the next few minutes. It goes away at 2 o'clock. 888-897-9424. Now, those online gifts are matched as well at WGBHnews.org.
And don't forget, if you support WGBH today, you'll have a chance to win the new gadget everybody's talking about. It is the Amazon Echo Show. It combines the best elements of the Amazon Kindle Fire and the Amazon Echo. So it is voice-activated. You can have a little conversation with it. And hands-free, you're cooking something in the kitchen, and you want to check that recipe, all you have to do is say, Echo, give me the recipe for risotto or whatever, and it just pops up right there. It is very cool. We'll also throw in a $500 Amazon gift card to go with that to one lucky listener who checks in at 888-897-9424 or gives online at WGBHnews.org. You have a pretty good chance of winning this. Don't delay. Make that call. But by the way, it wraps up at 7. It goes off the table. Make that call now.
Your gift right now will also give Marjorie the ammunition that when Jim returns, she can look him right in the eye and say, yeah, our fans were here for us too, for Jared and for me. Of course, we want Jim to come back. We welcome when he's here, but let's stand up for Marjorie today. 888-897-9424 or WGBHnews.org.
Don't forget, dollar for dollar match still in effect, but just for the next 3 minutes. Now is a great time to make your contribution, because for every dollar you give, the Members Matching Fund will donate an additional dollar. And by the way, if you call now, if you make that call right now, even if we don't get to you until after 2 o'clock, you will still take that call. It will still count, but please get that call in now. 888-897-9424, WGBHnews.org.
And don't forget, when you make that contribution right now, you will be automatically entered into the drawing. Yes, that Amazon Echo is a pretty neat tool. As you heard Andy's just say, Alexa, do this for me. Alexa, bring that up. She's right there for you. 888-897-9424. Now, just get the call started. We're approaching 2 o'clock, but if you get the call started or that online gift started, it will indeed count. Let's put every one of this opportunity of dollars together. We can only do that, though, with your help. 888-897-9424.
And don't forget about the Nerd Mug. We have this. It's a new membership, new for this membership drive, the WGBH Public Radio Nerd Mug, $10 a month. That is also being matched, but only for the next minute or two. Please make the call, 888-897-9424, WGBHnews.org, and thank you so much for your ongoing support. I'll say that number again, 888-897-9424, WGBHnews.org. Get those calls in. Let's get your gift matched dollar for dollar. Your gift will go twice as far, but only for the next 2 minutes. Make the call.